space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Thank you.
here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office, and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, under the radar, slipping in like a super ninja or something like that. Ha! Yeah, the power company ain't even going to see it coming. By the time it's all said and done, they're just going to be surprised. You're listening to the Mad Science Show at www.shazoozradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. And while you're on that page, you could also scroll down there and look for the People for People radio link. You can show up over there and tell them folks hi and tell them old crazy haired Chaziz sent you and all that stuff. So, Scroll up to the top right above the radio player, and there's a button there that says Stevens Resource Page. If you're into alternative energy research and researchers and all kinds of ideas, if you like putting your brain to a good, useful purpose, click on that link and go see all these links that that Steven had put together. Amazing page. Got all kinds of information out there for all types of different alternative energies and researchers and so on. So with that said, right underneath Steven's resource page, there is a red button that says Shaziz on Twitch TV. So what I'm hoping to do here, and I haven't done, I'm not doing it today, so you could actually go over there and click on it for future if you like, but basically what I'm going to try to do is to see if my bandwidth will allow that I actually can live stream some real-time videos. So like while I'm sitting here talking to you all, I'm all animated, you know. I'm pointing this out and I'm moving my hands like this and I'm trying to show you things and pick the right words to make you be able to visualize in your head. Well, if I got this Twitch TV thing going on at the same time, you could either tune in here or you could tune over there and actually listen to the radio show live as if it was watching TV, so you get to see old crazy hair Shaziz at the same time and all that jazz. So I think that could be kind of beneficial, because that program that actually runs at OBS Studio there actually has capabilities of sharing screens and stuff like that. So if I got some project that I just can't find the words to show you or tell you about, I'll just click on that and do some live streaming, and hopefully I'll have enough space on this the internet wire, Dad, burn it. The DSL. Yeah, I'm on a DSL line. That's what it is. Data service link. Yeah. Hate it when that happens. My mind gets moving so doggone fast, I leap right over something that I'm trying to think about, and I have to try to backtrack and catch up to where it was I was at so I can figure out what it was that I wanted to say. You ever have that problem? Well, anyway, so basically, you have the power, folks. That's flat out. That's exactly what it is. And each and every one of you out there may have a talent. Each one of you do have a talent. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Maybe you're no good with electronics, but you're probably good with cooking or singing or building or creating or even formulating words, you know, that kind of stuff. You might be really good talk radio, so maybe one of these days you join old Shaziz on the radio sometime and, you know, help him to be able to get his breath once in a while. So, anyway, but the reason why I'm saying all that is because I've been in the process of attempting to build the Dream Team, which I believe that this some present events that's come about that actually got my Dream Team going. Everyone needs a Dream Team. You've got a Dream Team in your neighborhood. You got a Dream Team somewhere in your community. There's some folks with some talents. And if you put all those pieces of the puzzle together, you would be amazed at what you can do. Now, one of you by yourself might not have the resources to fulfill a project that you got visualized in your mind that you want done, but all of you together as the Dream Team can pull your resources and your minds together, and you can troubleshoot things and get amazing things accomplished. Now, my job here on Mad Science is basically to try to point out things out there, already existing technology, solutions that are available. You know, the mainstream science, where, you know, maybe in one of their little general vicinities, they might be on any specific subject, but they're not into like a wide range of what's available and what's not. And I feel like the mainstream science pretty much sold us down the river for, you know, whatever funding or to keep their name or whatever, you know. It's just the fact that here we are in the year 2018 and we're still talking about things like alternative energy and, you know, alternative medicines and alternatives to all kinds of things out there. The system's kind of failed us, so to speak. And it, you know, the system basically is kind of a combination of all of society that, you know, to each his own. Everybody's got their own little bubble, and, you know, they're trying to build their world, but they missed out on the biggest and greatest resource available out there, and that's one another. Because if they actually took the time to help each other with resources, you know, it's like this. There's communities out there that whenever somebody has something goes wrong, that there's an old thing they call a barn raising ceremony, you know, a barn raising deal. Anyway, let's say a storm comes by, blows some farmer's barn down, or maybe a doggone fire, you know, worst case scenario, his barn's completely destroyed, and the community comes together and they take all their skills and their talents and their resources, and they come together as a family and a community, and they put this person's barn back up. And some in the Amish communities, there's a few videos out there if you want to look them up hard enough. There's like a 1,000-man Amish team that went in and built an entire house in one day. That's pretty impressive. So, you know, that just shows you what you could actually do with the right dream team. You know, it's unbelievable what you could accomplish with all the people. And keep in mind, during this barn raising deal, not everybody there was a carpenter. Not everybody there was a painter, or, you know, concrete layer, or whatever you call them. Mason, I don't know what they call them. Concrete people. Anyway, not everybody was a bricklayer or whatever. Not everybody was a plumber. You get all these people together with all these separate talents and skills, and next thing you know, you got a brand new barn sitting there helping out your brother or sister, you know, out there because of they had a hard time or whatever. So, with that said, you get your dream teams together in your community, and you use old Crazy Hair Shaziz and people like him for a resource for if you find something that you're not sure about and you can't seem to find it on research. You get on this ShazizRadio.com website here, and the guys like Stephen Gibbons out there, amazing individuals that can research just about any subject under the sun, and pretty much before you get through trying to explain it to everybody, he's already got links available out there in the chat room. So while these radio shows are going on, and over there, People for People Radio, they're sharing the information as well. And sometimes they jump over here, grab some links, go back over there, pass them around, and that kind of stuff. That's how this thing works. That's how People for People Radio works, and that's how Shaziz Radio, and don't forget Wolf Spirit Radio as well. There are many networks that are out there connected to Shaziz Radio, and, you know, so there's a lot of different places you can actually go in and listen in, which is a wonderful thing, because the more people that we can benefit, the better. So anyway, when I say you got the power, I mean it. Honestly, if you take and build your dream teams in your neighborhoods, in your communities, your towns, cities, or counties, or countries, or whatever, you can go out there, you can find the problems in your neighborhood, and you can resolve them. One of the problems that we stick to a lot here is in the energy field, because everybody's interested in clean, alternative, renewable energy that works in perfect harmony with nature and doesn't pollute and all that kind of stuff. You know, that's the kind of people to show up here and listen, but there's other people that show up not just for this, but, you know, during Saturdays and Sundays, same time, 8 a.m. Central to 11 a.m. Central, we also have a Knights of the Round Table. That's where we address other problems out there. And sometimes Knights of the Round Table will actually become a mad science deal. If it's relevant to, you know, a problem out there, we can throw the science portion in there. So you get the best of both worlds. Even here on the Mad Science Show, we're going to talk about things out there in the world that could be resolved simply, you know. We have access to some amazing technology. These days, the electronics and the technology that we have access to can do amazing things. Now, if you have a mechanical mind, or somebody in your dream team with a mechanical mind, they can look at problems, such as in the energy world. It never has been that we've ever had an energy crisis. It's not that we don't have enough energy. It's just the simple fact is we don't use it as efficiently as we could. And by using it efficiently, we do many things, such as we save our appliances and our circuit boards and all that kind of stuff from getting hot and failing, and you know that gives a longevity to everything. Speaking of failure, if I do have a problem here today, I've had a little bit of an issue with a power supply in my broadcasting computer. I've got one on the way, but won't be here till Monday. So hopefully, cross our fingers, we can make it through the entire weekend, and then I can replace that new power supply before we have an issue and crash and burn. But if I do at this point in the game, don't worry, I'll still get the podcast up. We'll still get it resolved. And one way or the other, we'll be back on the air again. So anyway, Twitch TV, that's where old Shazoo is going to try to do some live broadcasting. Plus, I'll still have my YouTube channel for videos, which I've got to actually get in there and do some videos because I ain't done some for a while. I've been really happy with YouTube because of some of the shenanigans they've been pulling on people out there, censorship-wise, and, you know, basically putting only a select few at the top of the search ratings and stuff like that. So, you know, a video, when you got 8,500 subscribers, you should have a little bit more than a couple hundred views every video. But, you know, something just ain't jiving there. So I figured, what the heck, I'll throw some things out there on Twitch TV, and that'll give some other people a chance to see it and see what happens from that, you know. It may be an actual case of one day leaving YouTube. I don't know. YouTube needs to get their act together. Otherwise, they're going to go down just like the old MySpace from the old days. I don't know if anybody's still on there. I have to Google that one of these days, see if MySpace is still around. But they was into some shenanigans, and so they run their people off, just like Facebook and all the other social medias out there. That's why you with your dream team probably have some network individuals and some computer folks, and you guys could get together and build your own social media networks. That way you can share your information without being messed with by folks that just don't want you to say certain things. You know, it's obvious that there's an agenda behind the power companies. They don't want you to know that there is a such thing as free energy, but unfortunately for them, because of the technology, Pandora's box has already been opened. Free energy is here. No ifs, ands, or buts. 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt, irrefutable. Now it's a matter of putting this into a system so that everybody can benefit from it. At the very least case scenario, we can engineer things that are so incredibly efficient that if we do have to pay the power company anything, it's going to be insignificant compared to, you know, what we would have been paying or what we're all paying presently. It seems like every time that time goes by that they seem to find ways to raise your rates and continue to basically milk you for every penny that they can get. When you find yourself down, they're not willing to come down there and help you out. They have no safety nets for the average Joe. You know, they don't have any mercy on you. If you don't pay your bill, they go walk over there, flip the switch, your lights go out, and whatever food you have in the refrigerator, depending on what temperature it is out there, will spoil or, you know, basically freeze solid, depending on where you're at. Nonetheless, it's uncomfortable because you either don't have the heat when you need it or don't have the cool air when you need it. And I think it's about time, with all this technology that we have available to us, that we get past all that. That we at least have supplementary systems in every single household, that if the power grid went down, it's no big thing. You know, you just go outside and enjoy the day. You know, go sled riding if you're in that environment, or maybe have a barbecue with your neighbors if you're in that environment, depending on what the weather is or whatever. There's always something to do, something that you could spend time with your friends and family and enjoy life. That's what it's all about, enjoying life. And this is also to the extent that all these people that are in what they classify as third world countries, which is terminology that I can't stand, because that puts somebody above somebody else. And I don't want to be above anybody else. I want to be equal to my brothers and sisters, and I don't mind being a servant to my community. I don't mind being a servant and a caretaker for all those people out there in need. That's as far as I'm concerned, that's an honorable job. It's a job that I love, and that's why I do Mad Science, because mainstream science seemed to have dropped the ball, so to speak. And when they're telling you one thing out of one side of their face through their school books, and then coming around and trying to convince you of something else out the other side of their neck, you know, it gets frustrating, because I paid attention in science class. And when I paid attention in science class, and then they started turning around lying to people and basically stealing from people with lies, then, you know, that's when my scales of justice said, no, we're going to work this out, and we're going to work it out in the right way. And I decided I'm going to start showing people how to do this stuff. I'm going to start teaching people about science in the most creative way so that hopefully they'll understand. Because you don't have to be no mad science guy to be here. You don't have to be an electronics engineer. You can be just who you are. You're the perfect person to be here. Each and every one of you. So when you show up over here, I'm truly honored. And I'm humbled that anybody would even take the time to listen to any words that are coming out of my mouth. But if I can do something good for you, if I can give you some sort of inspiration or some sort of idea that gets you motivated going out there trying and thinking outside the box. You know, when you go to school and you get indoctrinated all the way up through college and even into maybe your new job position or whatever, there's always somebody going to tell you this is the only way to do things. This is what science says, and then you can't break these rules. Well, I'm the kind of guy that I stepped outside the box, and I seen how it was really nice outside the box, because I could think for myself without anybody giving me any grief unless I look back inside the box. Of course, that's where all the grievers are. They're telling me I'm stupid and I don't know what I'm talking about, or saying all kinds of filthy things. You know, and because, you know, it seems like they'll fight really hard to protect the same system that keeps them down and oppressed. Well, with all this knowledge available out there, you know, I feel like the best thing I can do is point this out, point that out, say, look, hey, if you have a problem with that, try this over here, because this is what the research says on that. And we share that in that type of information. Knowledge is power, folks. And we have access to the vast sum of all man's knowledge, like my friend Simply Steve said. He's over there in the Philippines, I believe, and doing some pretty amazing things with gardening and solar power and stuff like that. He's helping the community out over there and doing pretty well, I believe. But, you know, what we have access to is amazing. And so all your people that you could gather up on your dream team, those are the pieces of the puzzle. And you bring all these technologies together, you share these technologies with each other, you share all these ideas. You know, my friend that I just talked about, Steve, he also said, it's at the top of Shaziz Radio on the banner up there. It says, nature needs no improvement. Only the arrogance of man requires change. That man is brilliant. Now, I tell you what. The time that I've been doing all these radio shows, I've met some really wonderful people. Now, I've met some crazy folks too, but such is life, right? It's a small world. But anyway, we can dodge our way around the crazy folks and the trolls and the shills or whatever, the government agents, and we can still teach each other a lot of stuff. I'm going to play a couple little podcasts. First one I'm going to start with is Laser Saber, but there's some capacitor technology out there called Boost Caps. And it's really, really amazing if you really think about what these things could actually accomplish as far as energy storage. And I might start and stop these a little bit and do a little commentary here and there, but I want you to pay real close attention to what he's saying about, you know, the difference in the weight of these batteries that are your standard lead acid batteries as opposed to the weight of the capacitor bank that he made. And that's really important, because anything that you can do to reduce weight or reduce the workload of that engine, you make that engine more efficient. You would actually save on fuel. Even if it's only a fraction of a percentage, it's still, it's savings. Another penny in your bucket, so to speak. So I'm going to play this first one right here, and I'll probably go on from there. I've got a few of them, but I also posted above these two videos with Laser Saber. I've posted a link to his YouTube channel because he took the time to share this with everybody. Maybe you go over there and check out his channel if you like what you see there, and you subscribe and help to support him because he's a really good researcher. There's a lot of really good researchers out there. Laser Saber's one of them. Lid Motor. There's just a Russ from RWG Research. I love that guy. You got to go check him out. Also, Mark Brash from Zero Fossil Fuel. There's links all over down here that you can go to check out their websites and what they're doing. And the Stevens Resource Page button that I mentioned earlier, that take you to a whole bunch more researchers. So if you hear anything on this show and it interests you, at least go over there and check them out. And if you like their channel, subscribe to it so that they can benefit as well by at least knowing that somebody out there's checking out their stuff. And it helps to motivate people when they actually believe that people care. So I'm gonna go ahead and play this here. Hopefully I don't get a commercial. But
okay, so one of the things I've been wanting to test are these smaller boost caps. And these are 350 farad 2.5 volt boost caps. You can get these at DigiKey right now for $11 a capacitor. I've seen them on eBay for $8 a capacitor. So these are easy to come by right now. I'm going to wire this in here and see if this little boost pack can start the car up because it's so small. Anyway, we will wire it up and do some testing and see if that works. All right, so I connected up the small boost pack to test, and I've just connected it directly to the battery terminals here, and I've got the larger boost cap that I know works really well with cars underneath it. But I'm going to test this little guy. These cells are the same size as a D-cell battery. So if this starts up my car, that's going to be really impressive, so let me get the keys here, and we will just see if we can even get the car to turn over with that little pack. Alright, so it's reading at 14.2 volts. Let's try this. Listen to that, folks. No way. Charged right back up to 14 volts, and it started this car with no problem. Oh, that's funny. So, that is something. I am surprised how easily that started. Let me try that again. And that is impressive to me. You know, I can't say what I could recommend using this at this point, but I'm going to start testing that. You know, I'm so impressed with this little boost pack's ability to start the car without any hesitation that I'm going to go ahead and take this larger one out and do some testing on this one. And I am just really intrigued. You know, this little guy just starts up my car without any hesitation at all.
All right, I'm going to pause that just for a second. Later on in this video, he actually talks about some additions that he actually makes to this thing. But what you just heard right there was essentially six D-cell sized capacitors that were able to have enough amperage to crank over the starter to turn that internal combustion engine on. That is really impressive. And so once we get through listening to some of these podcasts, I'll tell you why this is really important as far as being able to make super efficient equipment and ways that we're actually drawing energy off the power grid in such an incredible efficient manner that we can have a lot of savings just by understanding this technology and adding a few more pieces of the puzzle to the deal. So I'm gonna go ahead and play a little bit more of this here.
And what I may find it'll be necessary, this would be to put a lithium iron phosphate battery in the back of this. That might really really make a hybrid boost pack. But anyway, let me start this car up one more time. I'm going to hold the camera outside the car so you can hear the sound of the engine when this thing starts up. There's just no hesitation. Interesting. So, I've just got to show the progression that's going on here, folks. So, I had, as you saw in the first video, if you don't know what this boost pack's about, go back and watch my first video on the boost pack. Search for that, watch that, you'll get an idea how this came about. But here's the progression. Here's my traditional car battery, and we're looking at 30 pounds. So, I was all stoked when I went to this and brought that down to, I don't know, 7-8 pounds, and I've been using this over the winter. I went and rebuilt it, been using this, great success, and look at this, folks, I've gone down to this. It doesn't even bump the scale. This little thing actually starts my car right up, no hesitation, turns it right over. So I don't know what that's even coming in at, I don't know, half a pound or something, but this, I'm excited about this. Talk about some weight savings. Talk about a progression in my experimentation in this technology. You know, you can mount this up with a solar panel. So one other thing to point out here is on this one, these are 2,600 farad caps. They're connected in series. So we have 2,600 farad on this pack. This pack, we have 350 farad. So this is a much smaller pack. It's not like you're going to be leaving the radio on for half an hour or leaving this pack, you know, not running your car for 2 or 3 days, most likely, with this little guy. Because if you turn your car for 2 or 3 days, these capacitors may leak down in voltage and not be able to start the car. But hey, I'm going to start testing that. The only way to find this stuff out, really, in my experience, is just to hook it up and test it. So that's what we're going to be doing here, folks. We're going to hook it.
I pause it there again. Now, he said that after a couple, 2 or 3 days, that might bleed down and you wouldn't be able to start your car. But wait till you hear later on in these podcasts here, what he's able to do with these things. It'll blow your doors off.
This up right now. Okay, so in this big space here where I used to have the big traditional battery and then the first boost pack that I built, I've now got the mini boost pack. And I'm going to be testing this out here, and I'll get back with you on all the results. But it sure looks promising. I've wired it up in here, and I'm going to hand the camera over to my son. I'm going to start the car, and you guys can hear right in the engine bay of the sound of the car starting. You'll see that there's just no hesitation. This little boost pack just starts this car right up. So that's it, folks. This little pack is going to be in here, and I'm going to be testing it on my daily commuter car. And we'll see how this can how this will work. So far, I've just gone from amazement that it could even start my car to now amazement that it may be a functional battery replacement. And, you know, worst case scenario, I make it a hybrid. I put a small battery back here in the back. And I'll test this for a while just as is, but if need be, I'll go to that. So, anyway, guys, that's where we're at in the boost pack. Can't wait to pull into a car service place and have the mechanics take a look at this. That will be real interesting. Alright, so there we go. That little guy's ready for testing. Let me do a quick start up here one more time. So this is Boost Pack 2.0. It's made out of cutting board material instead of wood. Had I known that first one worked so well, I would have made it out of something more permanent, but I considered that first version just a test unit to test. And after it worked so well, I built up this one for a more permanent solution. So one thing I added is a little cigarette lighter volt meter, and that's really helpful because I can check the voltage here. It's at 13.4. So after letting it sit over the weekend, we'll come back, we'll take a check, and see what the voltage is at. That ought to be a pretty good test. So, day one of testing the car, sitting, not running. Last night it was at 13.6, and we're going to test the voltage now and just see what we're at. So, let's just take a look here. So yeah, it's out all night, and we're at 13. Okay, so, Sunday morning. So I parked the car Friday evening. It's now Sunday morning. Time to do a quick battery voltage test. So, let's just see what we're at here. So we are at 11.7 volts. So still plenty of voltage to start this car right up. I'm going to leave it here for another day, and Monday morning when I get ready to start my commute, I will test the voltage again.
Ah,
okay, so it's Monday morning, and we'll do a final test here. So the car set over Friday, or Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night. Let's just see what the voltage is here. So the voltage is 10.4 volts. After sitting out of the weekend, I'm going to try to start. Okay, car starts right up. And no issue whatsoever. So if you let the car sit for a weekend, at least in my case, no problem. Okay, so here's the results from all that chicken squawking and crowing that you guys hear. These are fresh in. And inside here, we've got a bunch that are cleaned up and ready. So just thought I would show folks who either complain or wonder about all the chicken sounds. What's up with that? We've got 24 chickens, and they're free. They just go walking around my property all day long, getting little bugs and scratching in the soil and squawking and barking and roosters crowing in all the videos that I make. But anyway, that's what they're up to, folks.
Oh,
all right, so it's 6:30. What I've done is I've turned the radio on, because a lot of people have asked, oh, if you leave your radio on, how quickly is this capacitor boost pack that you've made, how quickly is that going to discharge? So a lot of people are wondering, you know, if this is going to discharge right away if you're running the radio. So I'll turn it up to a normal volume, and I'll leave this running, and I'll come back later and check it. So 6:30 now, we'll see what we can get out of this. Okay, so it's been just over half an hour. We're down to 10 volts. So yeah, run the radio for half an hour, get down to 10 volts. Let's try starting it. So yeah, it starts right up. So yeah, you could run the radio for about half an hour.
All right, so that was a little update on his deal. I got a couple more of his particular podcasts. I don't know which one I just clicked on. Let me see here. Ed Burnett. Maybe it was that one there. Let's try this one here.
Okay, so it's been about a month that I've been using the Mini Boost Pack now. And I went ahead and did make a few changes to it. Just thought I'd make a quick update after a month of use. And show you where I'm at. So, here we are at the airport. This little car sat for 10 days, and it's using the Boost Pack Hybrid, the Mini with the 350 Farad caps. I don't know if it's going to start. This will be interesting. This is the longest time period. So, let's just get in here and see. 12.9 volts after sitting for 10 days. Just fine. Not a problem.
Look at that. 12.9 volts after 10 days.
Let's take a look at it. Give it a look. Yep, all good after 10 days of sitting on the Mini Boost Pack Hybrid. So good test. Okay, so I've had the mini boost pack in my car for the last 2 months. And during that time, I've left my car at the airport. The car sat for periods of, I don't know, 10 days or so, and restarted just fine. Very little voltage drop. And the reason is I turned it into a hybrid. On the backside here, I have a lithium iron phosphate battery. And you really should research lithium iron phosphate batteries if you do not know about them. Just take my word on it. Research them. They're amazing. But anyway, I coupled that with this and made a hybrid pack, and it just worked great for me. All the way up until yesterday afternoon when I tried to jump start my mower, and the mower had a really hard time starting, and I think I damaged this battery in trying to jump start the mower. So take note, if you've got this hybrid super mini, you know, 1-2 pound pack here, you may not want to be trying to jump start other vehicles. But anyway, I'm going to check this battery, see if the issue really is that I destroyed this battery. And if that's the case, then I'll replace the battery and I will be on my way and just not do any more jump starting. Some people have asked about the gauge wire that I connected the caps with. I didn't use any gauge wire. Let me set this down and just show you what I did. You can see I've got the negative rail coming off here. And on the negative rail, I used 10 gauge. So I guess you could say I did a short 10 gauge right to the bolt. And this is the standoff bolt that I actually connect to the car. But the caps themselves have these tabs. And all I did was solder the tabs to each other. So there's a real direct connection on the caps to connect in series. I've got some, I don't know, it looks like 16 gauge or 14 gauge copper wire here doubled over.
In case you missed it, I posted a link in the chat rooms over there to Super Chat for it's a Wikipedia article explaining lithium iron phosphate batteries. There's some really interesting things with those particular style of batteries, so if you go Google that up or check out on YouTube, you can find a lot of information on it. So I just want to throw that in there, so in case you might have missed what he was talking about there, check into that battery technology. Between the battery technology and the capacitor technology, which is getting better and better every single almost day, but at least every year, these technologies are getting really incredible. Robert Murray Smith, that's one to check out there with his basically using carbon, what the heck is it, graphene technology to build supercapacitors and really impressive batteries. So that's something if you get a chance to. I'll see if I can find a link to Robert Murray Smith's YouTube channel. That way you can go over there and check out his stuff that he's doing as well.
Wrapped around, soldered there to bridge that, and then again over to here. This is not the final way I would do this. I may even 3D print a holder for these so I can make up a nice little pack. But for now, for this prototype unit, this has been working great. You see that I can disconnect the hybrid system here, and this would then work as it did in my last video where I showed the mini boost cap, you know, and I tested it for a couple days without the hybrid system. The problem is these 350 farad caps just discharge too quickly if you don't make it into a hybrid unit. And I really like the hybrid unit. It's light. It works really well. So, let me replace the battery and see where we're at with this. Okay, so you can see the battery that got destroyed when I tried to do the jump start here. It's swollen up a little bit in comparison to this one. There's some really interesting videos on YouTube of lithium iron phosphate batteries being dead shorted and showing what happens when you do that. But what happened to this battery is it had a, it got destroyed when I did the jump start, and now the voltage on it, with a lithium iron phosphate battery, if you ever get low voltage, you know, if your voltage gets too low, you actually can end up destroying the battery. So that's what went on here. And let me just show you the voltage reading here. You can see it's at 4 volts. 4.9, 5 volts. And they should be up around 13 volts, 13 something. This one has not been on the charger yet, but it's at 13.25. I'll probably just couple this one in, hybrid, in with this pack. Okay, so I've hooked the system up, and you can see it charged the cap bank up, and we're already at 12.8 volts. So the capacitors charge instantly when you connect it, and pull very little out of this 4.2 amp hour battery. So that was pretty much instant charge in the caps, which is going to give me my cranking amps in this pack. I just want to check the balance on the caps, because I have no balance circuit on this. And if I check between each of these caps connect in series, I can figure out whether or not they're staying in balance. So just going to do that real quick. We're at 2.1 volts. We're at 2.23. So there's a slight difference between, well, it's 2.135 to 2.234.2.59. This is close enough for me because I'm always staying below the total max voltage on this unit. And as long as I'm doing that, I don't mind if they fluctuate just a little bit. And I check these from time to time, but I have no balancing circuit on this. You know, a lot of times there's a big discussion about whether or not we need to balance the capacitors. As long as mine stay this close to balance, I'm okay with that myself. So anyway, this is all testing, folks. We're nowhere near completion on this, but this is a prototype test unit. And so far, I'm very happy with the way this is working. So I'm going to go hook this up in the car, start up the car, and I will continue my testing with the new lithium iron pack. Okay, so you can see I've got the unit bolted back up in the car here, and before I put it back in the sock, I've been keeping it inside this wool sock, but before I put it back in there, I'm just going to start up the car and do a test. So far, this particular setup, apart from trying to do the jump start, has never let me down. And I have been able to leave the radio on and things with this unit. So you can see the voltage there is 13.2 volts. Let's start it up. 13.1 volts. It dropped to about 13.1 during the start cycle. Let me set this up so you can see it here. So I dropped down to 12.5 and then bounced right back up to 14. Starts right up, drops to 12.4 and then climbs back up. So yeah, I've just had no trouble with this hybrid system to speak of yet. So what I think I'm going to do at this point, I'm going to go ahead and put all the links to this stuff on laserhacker.com, the links to where I buy this, the links to the 350 farad capacitors, and the links to the lithium iron phosphate battery. At this point, I still consider this very much a test prototype unit, but I do have people emailing me and asking me about the 350 farad caps. I was very happy with the 2,600 farad caps and never had an issue. The 350s, man, I was just amazed they even worked. And then running them as a hybrid, they work very well for me. But this is a Scion XA four-cylinder car. You might want to look at the Scion XA and compare the specs. I have no idea how well this will work in other cars. But it's been working well for me, and had no issues whatsoever, other than when I tried to jump start. So I don't recommend any jump starting with this kind of a unit. But apart from trying to do a jump start, I've had no issue. It stayed balanced. It stayed functional. So for a 1 pound, 1 to 2 pound battery pack, this has really been working well for me. Okay, so it seems to be working well again, so I'm going to just put this back in the sock and get it ready to go here. But a real quick funny story. You know, I came up with the Boost Pack capacitor battery system after going in to have my oil change. And I had an oil change done, and the guys at the oil change shop tested my battery, and they said, you know, you're going to need a new battery. And I said, well, hold off on replacing it. And in the back of my mind, I was thinking, you know what? I've got so much stuff laying around from all my other experiments. I can probably just come up with something to replace, you know, the traditional battery altogether. So anyway, as you know, I've been testing these. Everything's been fine. Well, I go back to the oil change shop. And these guys, you know, they work in the car. And they're looking around. All of a sudden, the guy notices this thing here in the sock. And he calls over his buddy, and they look at it. He's like, you ever seen one of those before? The third guy comes over and looks. And I kid you not, they were pretty intrigued as to what might be in the sock. So they come over, look in the door, and they're like, hey, what's in the sock? And I told them it's capacitors to start the car. And they had quite a bit of disbelief about that. Anyway, just kind of funny follow-up story. And they wanted to hear the car start and wanted to know the details on it. They were pretty excited about the idea of something this small, this light, replacing batteries. So anyway, I know it's not right for every application. It doesn't really mean anything to me when people point out the fact that I can't listen to the radio for hours, because with this hybrid, I can. With the previous one, I could listen to the radio for half an hour. If I sit in my car listening to the radio for half an hour with the car turned off, that's a very rare occurrence. Usually I'm plugged into my iPod with my headphones if I'm parked in the parking lot. So for me, this is working great. Does that mean it'll work for everybody? Of course not. But I'm going to continue to experiment with this technology and test it long term. Okay, I just wanted to point out what I consider to be a really good long term solution to any issues with this over discharging. I'm going to get a lithium iron phosphate battery pack that has a PCM. And that module will basically keep the battery from ever over-discharging, isolate the battery from any short circuits. It will really allow this to work as a long-term solution. So if you do leave your lights on all night, it will shut this battery off before the battery experiences any damage. So I'm going to look for a pack that's under $50 that we can couple with these capacitors and make a really nice little setup. But I had these lithium iron phosphate batteries for RC purposes on hand, so I'm using those for now in testing. But as well as this is working, I'm going to go ahead and start to spec a lithium iron phosphate battery with a PCM. And that will just make this the perfect long-term solution for my application. So that's it, folks. Let's all keep experimenting.
All right, so he was talking about adding lithium ion battery with a PCM, and that's short for power control module. Basically, keep your battery from overcharging and such. And if you're not wanting to use it for a while, if you accidentally leave your lights on, it'll shut the module off so it don't run the battery down. That kind of stuff. So that's pretty cool. Pretty cool technology that's available out there. But anyway, the reason why I'm really talking about capacitor technology is because the technology that I'm working on, basically two different types. One is a circuit board to increase, take away the amperage and the wattage and bring it up to voltage for pressure purposes. I'll explain all that to you when it's all said and done, but essentially what it is that the reason why that works so well with him as far as his boost cap with the hybrid portion, where he actually added a lithium iron phosphate battery to it, was that the capacitor bank itself is actually acting as a buffer between the load and the battery itself. And so when it's just kind of just sitting there not doing nothing, you heard that even without that battery that it was holding a charge the first go around. 3 days he come back and started the vehicle up with it, and you know, starter motors take a little bit of amperage in order to be able to get that thing started up, and especially during the winter time, you know, your batteries, they get cold and they don't want to work so well, and that's why you got to have what they call cold cranking amps, which means that during the coldest portions of winter time, that your battery still has enough cranking amps to turn that starter, to turn that motor over, because you got to think that motor is actually cold enough that the oil is really thick inside there. Depending on what type of oil it used, some oils are thicker than the others, and so that makes that like really hard to turn that engine over during cold seasons. Well, with that the boost capacitors, it gives a sudden burst of energy to it. And so if you're going to be using these type of deals here, there's another video in here where he talked, not laser saber, but the next guy I'm going to share with you, that he talks about putting a resistor in between it so that you don't have that sudden surge of power that could cause you problems in your car, because capacitors will store in a massive amount of energy. Now, also, I don't know if I mentioned this or forgot, I posted a tiny URL link because I was having trouble putting the original YouTube link. And so it says link above is Robert Murray Smith's YouTube channel. He's the one that's into graphene technology, conductive ink technology. Actually, one time painted a heater right on the wall. And it don't get hot enough to set fire to the wall, but it puts off warm heat. It's just pretty impressive how he did that. But nonetheless, something to look into if you're interested in that kind of stuff. Go look at Robert Murray Smith. And what we're talking about here is making things so incredibly efficient. That's why I'm so excited about this capacitor technologies that are out here. Is because in combination with your battery, where you have essentially a hybrid capacitor / battery, not only does that battery keep the voltage pressure up inside that capacitor, but the capacitor has the capability of storing power as well, but you're using the actual capacitors to start your engine or your load instead of using the battery itself. So that makes the battery not have to work near as hard, and since capacitor technology has long term it's like million cycles or something like that, quite a few cycles of charge and discharge. And with a regular battery, after you charge and discharge it for a while, it starts to wear down that battery a bit. Well, part of which is because if you have a lead acid battery, then you are actually using electrolysis inside there. You got water and electrolyte, battery acid inside that, between those plates. And so when you run a load, you're actually producing hydrogen inside that battery, which, hydrogen, because of the size of a molecule, it will pressurize that battery. So therefore, unless it's a sealed lead acid battery, which they're still vented to some extent, maybe not as much as a regular car battery, but nonetheless, that hydrogen can escape from the battery, because essentially you're doing the electrolysis and you're separating the hydrogen and oxygen, and so your liquid inside your battery will start getting lower and lower until it doesn't have as much electrolyte as it needs, and reduces the cranking power of it, the voltage and everything. And that's one of the ways where your battery can go bad. Sometimes you get lucky and all you got to do is put more battery acid in it and you're good to go. You charge it back up and it's all good. But with that process there, you're not causing that thing to be under such a load that it's doing with the capacitors. It's running the power off of the capacitors, and your alternator is charging the capacitors rapidly, which that energy is able to bleed back into the battery, keeping it topped off and healthy for long periods of time. That's why this is amazing, and that's why it's really important, because if you're running a solar panel set up and you're constantly charging and discharging, because whenever you got your solar cells charging your battery and you're drawing your load, which is your inverter, to run your AC current, well, that's going to make that battery get hot. It's going to make that battery work harder and potentially dry out faster from the electrolysis that's actually occurring inside that battery between those plates, and it will make that battery fail sooner. But with the method of using the capacitors as the buffer between your battery, that will keep your battery cooler, because the actual load is being covered by the capacitor bank itself. So that's one of the reasons why they use those capacitors in stereo systems in car, in car audio systems, so high-powered car audio systems, they'll drain your battery fast and demand too much from that battery, which demands too much from your alternator. And so in order to put a buffer between there, they use these really cool 500,000 microfarad capacitors with a digital readout on there. It tells you the voltage. And so you can save your battery and still get a smooth run on your stereo system. So with that said, if you're running solar panels and you have hybrid batteries with capacitors, and your capacitors are actually pulling the load off of the capacitors as opposed to the battery direct, that's going to make your solar panels more efficient. That's going to make your batteries last a lot longer. Now, this same concept will go as far as whenever I get into explaining to everybody about how if you pull that energy off of your generator in a different fashion than the common way that we do it, what's the conventional method by which we pull energy off of our generators. When you do it the conventional way, you actually send energy back into the same generator you're trying to pull the power from. That therefore, if you got let's say a 5,000 watt peak generator, you might only be getting 3,500 watts out of that, because the more load you put that thing under, it can't reach the peak voltage anymore because you're using it too much, making it have to work harder and bogging it down. But if you take that same 5,000 watt generator and you move that energy away from the generator, you know, maybe through a bridge rectifier into a combination battery capacitor, and use the capacitors to run your load, from that point on, you just drastically reduced how hard that battery bank actually has to work. You reduce to how hard that generator actually has to work, and it can keep up with the charging of the batteries, because the majority of that energy is going to go into the capacitor first, and it's going to pressurize that capacitor, which that excess is going to bleed off into the battery and keep it topped up. And so as long as the battery's topped off and your capacitor is charging rapidly and you're using that energy on demand, you ain't got no heavy-duty load being pulled on that generator. So that's just one little tiny method by which you could take your average generator, solar panel or wind turbines, to make them more efficient because they don't have to work so hard. Now, the next method that I'm talking about is basically taking that voltage off of the generator, ramping it up to a high voltage. Now, when you ramp the energy up to a higher voltage, your current obviously goes down because now you're raising the pressure, but you're lowering down the current flow. That's no worry. Don't worry about that part right yet, because you'll get the amperage back through the doggone capacitors, because if you have a surplus of energy, which I've proven in my live stream that I'm doing over there on Twitch TV, that you can run a real-time load and be able to charge. I took a DDS signal generator, which is 5 volts input, and I think the max output on that without a load is 9 volts. From 5 volts, it ramps it up to 9 volts, and pulsing that at 600 hertz with a square wave in through a microwave oven transformer and ramping that voltage up again to over 90 volts, and then running that 90 volts through a bridge rectifier, and then using that output DC to charge up some circuits and some capacitors that then in turn bleed over to a larger bank of capacitors. And during this whole entire time, keeping a surplus of at least 7.4 volts. So think about what I just said. I started off with 5 volts. That was coming out of the USB charger that actually plugs into the wall. So in reality, I started off with a 110-volt outlet and plugged that in, and then that ramp that drops it down to 5 volts, which basically that first portion, the charging system from the actual wall outlet, which I didn't even really need, I could have run that 5 volts off of a battery instead, and then I wouldn't be using the whole 120 volts AC, 110, 120, whatever it is. It's anywhere from 110 to 120 volts AC that comes out of our wall sockets at 60 hertz over here. So I brought it from 60 hertz, dropped it down to 5 volts, ramped it up to 9 volts, changed it to 600 hertz, and basically charged up, pulsed a microwave oven transformer on the primary, and then energized the secondary to produce high voltage and send that high voltage down through a bridge rectifier. Now, why this is important, folks, is that when you ramp that voltage up, current meets a lot of resistance, and current is what actually produces a lot of heat when you meet that resistance. You will cause your transistors or your MOSFETs or whatever circuitry you got to get hot because they're having to pull a lot of power, and they're trying to let the power go through, but there's too much power. We're actually using too much power to run the loads that we're running. And so by changing up how we're pulling that power off, we can actually preserve the longevity of our appliances, and at the same time, being able to get the same amount of work done. All we're going to do is change that energy from one form, store that energy, build it up into pressure, and then use that pressure, which now, because of the design of how these capacitors work, and the ultracapacitors and supercapacitor technology, now those supercapacitors are actually being used like batteries. So you actually got your current back at your disposal. And just by using the voltage alone, you can continuously keep those things topped off and pressurized so that you can run real-time on-demand loads. So how this is going to be beneficial is that if you change this voltage from high current to a high voltage and not trying to force this through there, that means your prime mover, which is your like gasoline generator, motor, whatever, your engine, or even your electrical motor, doesn't have to work near as hard as it would have before. So if you're using gasoline or diesel or propane or whatever types of fuel that you use, even biodiesel, it don't matter. Whatever fuel you're using in there will use less fuel because now your generator isn't bogging down from that lens effect where all that those electrons are trying to get back into the same generator that you're trying to pull from. So you're going to move that energy away from that generator and put that energy out into a different state that generator is not going to be backing up of electronic or electricity or electrons or whatever. Anyway, with a bridge rectifier, if you know anything about electronics, diodes only allow the current to flow in one direction. And so that means that when it gets out of that circuit, out of that generator, goes through that rectifier, it can't come back the other direction. It would have to be more power on one side to actually be able to force its way back through the other direction. So you're sending that current out, you're dropping the current, ramping the voltage up, sending it in one direction, keeping it from coming back to the generator, putting it in storage. Now you're using a combination hybrid battery / capacitor system to run your loads from, and the actual capacitors themselves are absorbing that power draw there. That they're actually acting as a buffer between the battery, between the bridge rectifier, between the actual AC generator itself. And so then you should be able to go up there and your generator head should be cool to the touch, your bridge rectifier should be cool to the touch, because you're not allowing all those eddy currents to build up, and you're not allowing that resistance to cause it to produce the heat that usually ends up destroying after a certain point when you reach the thermal breakdown and your insulation on your generator fails. So you pull the energy away from it, change it to any other state of energy, and in my case, the plasma technology that I'm sharing with people, is the state of the energy that I'm changing it to, because I'm more wanting to get into some radiant energy, some wireless energy transfer, and some thermal energy as well. So I'm actually changing it to several different forms of energy at the same time. And the only time you got a loss in the system is whenever you decide not to use that energy, that tap into that energy where your losses are actually at. So with that said, you can reach amazing efficiency. I'm going to try to play this other podcast if I can find it. Let's see, I think this is the one right here. I'll try this one right here. This is where the guy, and I'm going to post his YouTube video link as well, so that, I think I already did that. Yeah, over there in the super chat room, I think I posted his as well. Anytime I find researchers like this that are testing this type of technology out, I'm going to bring them to you so that you can check out what they're doing. Because knowledge is power, folks. If you pay attention to what they're saying and you take and use your brilliance to add to the mix there, you'd be surprised at what you could actually figure out. So let me play some of this so I can take a little bit of a breath and you can hear something.
Hi everyone, I've been talking in recent videos I got this next major project that I'm working on. Well, I got a mock-up of it right now for testing purposes, and it's time to give you a little more information about what we're going to lead into in future videos. What I'm building is a hybrid supercapacitor battery pack for cars. This way, you can get rid of the lead acid part, and I'm basically expanding upon Laser Saber's work, where he just took 6 supercapacitors, put them in series, and started cars with it. And then later on, he also added a lithium iron phosphate little RC battery pack to it, so this way the supercapacitors wouldn't always drain down from the parasitic loads that's on the car. And it worked great, but he forgot one major thing with that, and that is when you start a car, even though the supercapacitors are going to take probably 90% of the jolt of amperage that is needed to start a car, he didn't limit the amount of current that can come from that battery pack. And the easiest way to do that is with one of these. This is a 200 watt rated half ohm resistor, and that goes between the supercapacitors and the batteries. Now, for testing purposes right now, I'm using an old lead acid because I haven't gotten my lithium iron phosphate batteries in yet, but I'm going to bring it in a little bit closer. I'm going to show you the setup I have mocked up here and continue with the work that Laser Saber did. So, let's get closer. Okay, so here we are on the bench, and this is the center of the unit. This is a control unit with a display right here. And what this does is allows power to come in from the battery over here on the side, and it comes back in through the center, and this will give me a readout of basic information. Also has a 30 amp relay that runs in between, which will cut the power off if the voltage goes too low in the battery or the amperage draw goes too high. It's basically a nice way to keep an eye on the whole unit. This is not required for this system, but I love seeing what's going on with it. So I put this in the middle, and I could give a full review on this unit, but Julian has already made a great review on this unit itself, and I'll put a link of it probably like somewhere right around here, or around here, somewhere around here, and go ahead and check his video, and he will show you how this unit actually works. I'm going to show you real quick what I did to modify it, because originally, with the screen on all the time, and the way this unit is shipped, it will pull over 100 milliamps very easily, and I made it so it pulls when the screen turns off and it goes into sleep mode, which basically just go down to set, which I'm at. There we go, no glare. And you just keep clicking it until it says display time off, just set it for 5 seconds or whatever, and the screen will turn off. That kills about 20 milliamps right there. So now the screen is in sleep mode and it still records information.
The other things I did, normally you have to put power, this unit is actually rated for anywhere between 12 to 48 volts, so you got to put 12 volts in here. Since I'm still working on a 12-volt system, I bypassed that.
I'll put a pause there for a second. Anon4305 in the chat room said there's a loss when you move any energy. And it's only a loss if you don't tap into that energy, such as the heat loss from your engine, your internal combustion engine. Your average car out there runs anywhere from 160 to 180 degrees Fahrenheit. Some larger vehicles will run up to 220 degrees Fahrenheit. And all that energy is lost out to the atmosphere because you have to transfer it through the water and all that kind of stuff right there. But if under the right circumstances, you could re-engineer that engine to where there wouldn't be no losses. You can focus that heat energy to where you want to go. So if you find a loss in your system, whether it be friction or heat, there is actually a, you know, heat due to friction, there is actually a solution in order to reduce that to make it even more efficient so that you can recapture that energy and reuse it in another part of your system somewhere. So that's where when, you know, I hear something like there's a loss in moving energy, you got to first understand what you're going to be doing with that energy, and then you see any potential drains on the system, and then you can use physics to compensate for each and every purpose, each and every one of these, what would have otherwise been losses. I just wanted to throw that in there real quick.
I cut the trace over here. Let me get my little tweezers. I cut this little trace right here, which eventually went to ground, and this trace right over here that eventually went over to positive. And I directly ran power, positive, that goes to the electronics from this pin, and it runs over and actually connects into right here, the output positive. Now, the reason I put it over here instead of over here is I also wanted to see its own load on the screen. So, like right now, if I wake it back up, going to tell me, see, we're pulling 90 milliamps right now. Now, that's the combined amount of power being used from this and also keeping this supercapacitor pack charged right now, because this is already on. So, if you put the positive that was over here over to the battery side, it won't record it. It's before this shunt that actually records the power going through it. So, I put it over here and I just hit it. The ground here is actually just ground to ground, so I just cut that trace, don't even use it type of deal. The other major modification I did to it is over here on the side, actually two modifications. One, since this is a relay, all relays usually pull around 30 to 50 milliamps when the coil is activated and the relay is actually on. And it's on right now because you can see the little LED light on. So I can turn it off just as easy. Click. There, it's off right now. And now it's back on. Well, when that switch is on, this pulls an extra 50 milliamps originally. Now it only pulls about 20 to keep this on, and the easiest way to do that is on this little 4-pin connector right here, this very last wire goes to the relay coil. I cut in the middle of it and put the equivalency of 280 ohms resistance and a 470 microfarad capacitor. This makes a really simple RC filter, so when you put power to it and turn on the relay, it immediately gives it the 12 volts it needs to get started, but then it drops it down to about 5 volts and almost no power. Once a relay is activated, its holding power is a lot less than what is needed. So I'm not sure if the camera will pick it up. Let me turn it off. And you should see a momentary really bright on the screen. It's only like 30 or 50 milliseconds long for the LED, and then it gets dim and just stays there. Try one more time. But it gets really bright real quick, and then it fades down to where it is. That's the RC filter. It allows the full 12 volts to go to this relay just to get the switch over, and then it calms it on down, and that saves about 20 milliamps right there of power.
All right, so once again, because that specific comment that I addressed in the chat room, if you listen to what he's saying, is he actually took this circuit and he found whichever would have been losses in that particular system and basically modified it so that the circuit itself is minuscule as far as how much energy is actually being drained off of it. Well, you got to keep in mind what energy is being used right at that point is actually being used for a purpose to store data so that he can be able to keep track of what this bank is doing. So anyway, let's go.
The other last thing I did, actually, sorry, two more things I forgot. You can save another 3 or 4 milliamps because these are supposed to be wireless, and you can run them wireless or wired. Well, here's the wireless. They're the NLRF chips or whatever they are. Yeah, I ripped them out. I'm putting this in the car. I can run wire from where I'm going to put this battery pack up to the screen. That saved about 3 milliamps worth of wasted power with these not doing anything and just sitting in there. So, yeah, I ripped those out. Okay, and the final mod is they usually give you this little USB cable if you want to do a wired version to the screen. See, originally I had it back in here. And you run USB from, it used to sit right here, if you look in Julian's video. And it will plug into the back of the screen, and they'll give you a wire connection. It sucked. The cable they give you, or these things, are terrible. You never get a good connection. So I hardwired it. I ripped out that connector that was over here, ran some Cat5 cable over to the screen, and that gave the screen a nice solid amount of power. I don't get any flickering out of it. I don't lose any information on it. It worked great. What do you expect? The unit itself cost $25, so they had to cut corners somewhere. So I'm just re-improving the unit. Now, since I am going to put probably this whole battery pack in the trunk of my car, but I want the screen up front, I also went online, and I think these were like $3 each. All these are RJ45s breakouts, regular Ethernet breakouts. And so I got 8 wires to work with. Plug them on in. And I did it on both sides, because on this side, I had not only have, bring it on over here, the screen itself plugged into the RJ45, but I also have 4 more wires to work with, because this only has power and ground and signal and ground. So that's 4. The other 4, I have wired up, one for lithium iron phosphate, the actual to monitor the battery pack, and one for the supercaps. So this way I can see the difference in the voltages when the car's starting, running, whichever, and I can measure the amperage to keep an eye on it with this unit. So it's perfect, it works great. And I got a 20-foot spool of cheap $3.50 Cat5 unshielded cable. It's not like I really need shielded for what I'm doing. So this way I can run the battery in the back of the trunk and I can have my screens all the way up front. And it works beautifully, at least in the mock-up right now, because it's running through the 20-foot of cable as we speak. So now, I've explained, yes, I have a lead-acid battery off to the side here. Power comes on in, goes through the relay, then it goes back on out. Let's see here. Your positive runs through the half-ohm resistor, and what this does is basically when the supercaps, let me see if I can slide everything down here a little bit. When the supercaps are done starting a car, they're probably going to sit around 12 volts until the alternator starts kicking in and charging it back up. Well, this keeps the amount of current down to about 5 amps maximum coming from the battery to continue charging the supercaps and vice versa. Once the alternator recharges these back up to about 14.1 volts, power can flow back through and recharge the battery, again, regulating it at about 5 amps maximum, considering the battery might hit 12 volts and this will be at 14.4. You're working with only about a 2 or 3 volt difference, so that should limit it around 5 amps, which is perfect for any battery. And that's how you keep from killing batteries. Now, the supercapacitor pack itself, we're going to do this in the next video. We're going to build one of these. Actually, I need to build 4 more of these. And these are the final versions of what's going to happen. Originally, you start with one of these 6-cell boards. Well, since I'm using Amperex, these little supercapacitors I showed the video of before, the 3-volt, 400 farad capacitors, I only need 5 of these to make a 15 volt pack. So I'm going to show you how to modify this board, because this board is meant for 6 cells and 2.7 volts. We're going to modify it for 3 volts and only 5 cells, because we actually need to build 4 more of these. I'm going to have 5 of these stacked together in parallel, and then run a big giant bus bar across. Now, there are 2 ways of protection right on this board itself. One is 3 volt protection for each cell. It keeps them from going over voltage. They like to call these boards balance boards. They're not balance boards. The only time they balance is if you bring this all the way up to 15 volts and you actually have all the LEDs and all these things actually protecting all the circuits. Then, yes, it's a balance board. But if you're floating all the cells at like 2.8 or 2.7 volts, it's not doing a damn thing. None whatsoever. It's not a balance board. It's a overvoltage protection board. For balancing, I'm using the SAB MOSFETs. These ones happen to be the ALD8100-23, 2.3 volt rated ones. So this way it's always working. And I really haven't had any problems with it. It works really good for balancing. And that works as long as these super caps are 2.3 volts or above. It will shuffle the power around and make sure they are all balanced really close, usually within about a tenth of a volt. And that is balancing. So we have protection and we have balancing all in a single stack. So that is the basic premise of what I'm working with. I want to have a system that will work as a battery, starting battery and running battery for a car that will last longer than the car. The supercapacitors definitely will. And if we treat the lithium iron phosphate battery good, it should last as long as the car itself. None of this lead acid dying within every 3 or 4 years type of deal. And this won't care about high heat in the summer, unless you live in the Amazon or something like that. And definitely won't care about starting in wintertime, because the super caps, which actually do the starting for the car, they don't care about the cold. So I can't wait. Once I have this built and we hit the dead of winter and it's like a negative 5 degrees in Delaware, which barely ever happens, by the way, but it does get really cold, and you get that sluggish start, I'll bet you 10 to 1, and I will do a video of this come wintertime, it'll crank right over. It won't care, because super caps still work at low temperatures. And even lithium iron phosphate battery, all it's doing is keeping everything trickle charged at maybe 20 milliamps. That battery will not care at that temperature to keep a little bit of a trickle charge. So this will work great in a wide temperature span and a lot of longevity. That's the whole idea behind this. So next two videos are basically set up. I have 2 sponsorships, one from Amperex. They're sending me an extra 15 supercaps so I can build the rest of the supercapacitor array. And we're going to show you how to build this in the next video. The other sponsor is going to be Stark Power. They are sponsoring 2 of their 9 amp hour, 12 volt rated lithium iron phosphate deep cycle batteries. Ah, that was a mouthful. But they're going to send me 2. One for actual use in this unit to replace the lead acid that we're just using for the mock-up right now. And the second one so I can tear it down and actually see how good it is. So those videos will be right after we're done with the super caps. And then we'll actually start putting everything together in this nice little case and get it ready for being put in the trunk of my car. This case is a little too big to fit where the battery originally was, and it will fit perfectly in the trunk. So, we have a few videos to go here. Keep tuned. I will probably make a playlist out of this. If you have any questions or comments, go ahead and leave them down below. I need thumbs ups if you can. Thank you very much.
Okay, so... so, I hope that... I hope that didn't bore you too much with that, but there's some really important stuff that he said in there. I also posted his link to his YouTube channel, and there was one last one that I wanted to play from the same guy. Let's make sure I got the right one, because it was an update of what he had done. He's got a long series on showing you start to finish on how to do all that stuff with these capacitors slash batteries. Let me see. I think that this is the one.
So what is this thing that I'm calling a boost?
Nope, that's the wrong one. Ah. Alright, let me see if I can find the right one here. Sorry about that.
Happy Thanksgiving 2017, everyone. And it is 23 freaking degrees out here in Fairfield, Virginia, at my in-laws for Thanksgiving. And it's been, 6 weeks now? I meant to do a 4-week update for the supercapacitor hybrid car battery. Well, I've been busy with moving and work and everything. So we're going to kill two birds with one stone today. One, we're going to do the update with the modifications I've done in the past month. A little bit of tweaking so this way it works correctly. And at the same time, we're going to do a cold start because most lead-acid batteries at 23 degrees, if they're getting old, they're getting weak, you know sometimes they won't start. So we're going to do both of them.
Okay, so first things first, let's get the cold start out of the way. The car's been sitting for about 10 hours, and I can't focus on the screen right now because the frost is in the way. So we'll take a look at it as soon as I open the door. Right now it's saying 13.2 volts. I open it on up.
There you go. 13.2. It's just starting to drop because the lights are on now.
So, we are at full power. Let's sit down and let's do a start.
It didn't even care at 23 degrees.
Actually, it's saying 25 on the car, but it's actually 23 degrees. So, she cranked over perfectly.
And you see, it's already charged back up. The battery will come up in a few more minutes up to about 14.3, 14.4, but you can see the supercapacitors are already fully charged. And, of course, here's one of the updates. I am no longer using this. And the reason being is the unit started acting really weird. That was in the back with the battery and supercapacitors. It wouldn't read the amperage correctly. Something was wrong with the shunt. It was reading like 80 amps when it wasn't doing anything, and it got all wonky. So I ended up just ripping out the unit. I got the usable information out of it. Now, I did have one problem with it, and the main problem was the half-ohm the half-ohm resistor that we were using. The problem with that was it was doing a great job of decoupling the battery from the supercapacitor. This way you didn't actually use the battery so much when it came to starting. You used all the supercapacitor, but it wasn't allowing enough amperage to come back in. So after about a week or so, it ended up actually draining the battery because I couldn't get it charged because most of my commutes are about 20 minutes long. So I ended up changing it out. Let's open up the trunk, and I put a much smaller one in there. Instead of a half ohm, it's a 1/10 of an ohm. Now, it still stays within the 15 amp charge rating of that battery, but it allows it to fully charge within about 5 to 10 minutes of idling. It's perfect. And I haven't had an issue since I removed the relay unit that gave me the information up front, and also changed out the resistor for half ohm to 1/10 of an ohm. So let's go ahead and look at the quick little modification on that. And you can see I have removed the actual relay unit. It's completely gone. And I used to have the half ohm resistor stacked on the side. Now it's just this little 25 watt rated 1/10. Okay, there we go. Now we got focus. 25 watt 1/10 of an ohm rated resistor, and it works beautifully. It never overheats. Otherwise, that's the only two changes I've done to this unit, and I've never had a problem with it since. I've also had a few viewers request that I put a clamp meter on here and see the amperage draw on starting it, whether it be from the supercapacitors or the battery. So we're going to do that right now. Okay, so the car's still running from when I first started it, and you can see right now it is recharging the battery with about 2.36 amps. I'm on the main positive that's going up to the front of the car. So we're going to go ahead and switch it to minimum and maximum on this meter. And I'm going to shut off the car and turn it back on.
Basically, let me pause this just for a second. Basically, what he's doing right now is showing that the amp draw from the actual capacitor bank as opposed to what's actually being drawn from the battery. This is really important.
Start. So, looks like 27.56. Now, see, this is for the maximum. It's over limit. This meter only reads up to 600 amps, so that's as far as I can go with it. And of course, minimum is also over limit. So we've gone past this. I'm still pulling more than 600 amps with no problem whatsoever through the super caps. Now let's do this again on the battery side. So let me clear this out. There we go. And let's connect up to the battery. Positive. And you can see the battery right now is charging at 1.73 amps. So again, let's switch it on over to minimum and maximum and stop and start again. Stop. Start. You can see the battery is still charging at 1.76. Only 2.8 amps, that's minimum. Average, maximum. Yeah, 1.76. It didn't pull practically anything from the battery whatsoever. It all came from the supercapacitors, and it still charges perfectly fine. And you can see the battery right now is taking 1.5 amps to top it off. So, it's isolated beautifully, and it's not even really worn to the touch right now. So, it works beautifully. So another thing we wanted to do, while the car is still running right now, we also wanted to check the balance on the supercapacitor arrays that do not have the balancing circuit on it. Now that they've been running for 6 weeks, let's see how balanced they are. Are they going out of balance? Are they going over voltage? The car is currently running, and the front gauge is saying that this supercapacitor pack is at 14.4 volts. So let's just double check that real quick once I get this untangled here. So here's positive, here's negative. Yep, 14.44 volts for the whole supercapacitor pack. So let's check and see how these are doing. There's negative. 2.9. You have to bear with me, my hands are cold. 2.92 basically. Still not bad. 2.88, and the last one, 2.85. That's close enough to balance. That's perfectly fine. That's probably about what these are. So we're not having any balance issues with this, no overvoltage issues. These capacitors are very well matched for their internal resistance. They're not drifting at all. That's beautiful. I love it. So there you go. The battery works beautifully. The only two modifications we had to do was rip out the relay unit and change the decoupling resistor from half an ohm to 1/10 of an ohm. I also shrink it down because it's not dissipating as much heat. So you don't need that big giant one that we had before. That nice little one works beautifully. And we can also tell now that that supercapacitor array that Amperex makes that doesn't have any balancing, and I couldn't solder a balance board to it, is actually staying in balance even without having a balance board on it. So my next thing I'm going to try doing is when Amperex finally gets into stock with them again, I'm going to buy two more of those supercapacitor arrays, install them, and remove the two with the balance boards, because they're a lot bigger and they're lower capacity. Those are only 400 ferric tuber caps, whereas the array that they have, the string of five, is 600 and it's more compact. So I want to get two more, redo the copper bus bars, and make the whole unit more compact. We don't have the big giant resistor anymore, So I'm going to get a smaller case, and depending upon how small I can really make it, it might go back up in the front engine again and make a nice little compact unit that would actually sit where a regular battery would go. So I don't know when this is going to happen. I got to wait until Amperex gets it back in the stock. So let's see. We'll keep playing with this, and I will keep it updated. But again, you saw the car. It started perfectly fine at 23 degrees this morning. It acted like it was 70 degrees outside. So there's no problems whatsoever. Granted, I'm not going to be able to test at negative 20 degrees Fahrenheit because I'm not going to Alaska, and neither is the car. But at least in the Northeast, I might see a 10 degree or 5 degree day once this winter. If I do, I will gladly retest it again and put the video up on here for you. So if you have any questions or comments, go ahead and leave them down below. And any thumbs up is appreciated. Thanks.
Yeah, and I ain't going to Alaska either unless I figure out I'm doing some gold prospecting. Anyway, I'm done with all those podcasts. Just wanted to share those with you because there's a lot of information in there. And if you actually, it's kind of like two separate testimonials of what they were actually able to accomplish with them boost caps and basically making a hybrid battery bank. So essentially, the point in sharing all that with you is that if you want to make your solar panels or your wind generators or your existing gasoline generator or any generator you're working on right now, we're talking about taking and increasing the efficiency at the very least. And so I got my hand, I did have it in my hand. I must have set it down. What'd I do with it? Hold on. There it is. This is it. Right there on the table. Anyway, I got in my hand a couple circuits that I'm really excited to test with. These things are boost converter circuits, and they go from input 8 to 32 volts, and they will ramp the voltage up anywhere from 45 to 390 volts, 110 volts to 220 volt ZVS capacitor charging. So with this particular circuit right here, it looks like it's got a power MOSFET on there, but it might be a transistor. I'm not sure. I have to take a look at the numbers. But either way, this particular circuit right here had to have the capability of taking energy off of your generator and ramping the voltage up and basically, decreasing the current down, which therefore you could pressurize capacitors. And I know that it drives people nuts when I talk about pressurizing a capacitor, but that's the easiest way to explain it, and that's basically what you're doing. I did a video quite some time back called Physics Toy, where I made a bottle that had a balloon inside of it, and with this particular design, it kind of shows you about vacuum and pressure and stored energy all in the same exact little toy. Might be nifty to make and send around to some schools, to teach some kids about stuff. But if you understand how this little bottle with the balloon in it is actually functioning, I'll have to look up that video and post a link in there, or you can just go on YouTube and Google it up and you can find it. But anyway, watch that video. If you understand how that doggone deal's working, then you understand how capacitors are working. As long as this guy ain't got no path, then that energy will store inside there. And basically, when it finds a path, both of the sides of the plates will equal themselves out, and therefore it'll be basically what we call a discharged capacitor, or the same as with your battery, that when both plates are, balanced out back to their natural state, you got a dead battery. But both of them have potential energy in there, and you can store energy in those. And if you use it in the method by which these folks just explain how they're doing it, you can take the load off of your alternator or your generator or your primary driving force, so that you're not having near the losses that you would have had otherwise without taking that energy off like that. And so the deal that I'm working on at this point in time is to basically show you how to pull that energy away from that generator and still be able to get the maximum amount of power available out of that generator without causing that generator to get hot. So if you do happen to check me out on Twitch when I'm doing a live stream, there's some videos up there right now. I think these videos only stay up there for like 14 days and then they delete them off to save space or whatever. But I can download them, or I'm sure you can download them as well if you got a Twitch account and save them for later. But either way, what I was explaining in there when I was running that DDS signal generator is that, you know, I'm coming from the main power from 120 volts, knocking it down to 5 volts, ramping it back up to 9 volts, pulsing a 600 hertz square wave into a microwave oven transformer through the primary, and catching voltage out of the secondary, a higher voltage out of the secondary that I'm using to pressurize capacitors as I'm running it through a bridge rectifier, and using the rectifier to be the charging system for the capacitors, and while at the same exact time running a real-time load and still having a surplus of energy available in there. So it's about the size of the capacitor bank, the size of your battery bank. The more you have, like if you take three batteries in series that are 12 volt, you'll have 36 volts per bank there. And then if you add another one in parallel with that are also in series, now you have basically double the time that you can actually run this thing off. So you could calculate up the amount of time that you need to run something, keep those batteries topped off, and as long as you're putting energy into that bank, and you'll have the energy necessary for running your loads real time. And by using the capacitors as a buffer between your batteries and your load, then that will reduce the wear and tear on your batteries to make them last longer and make them more efficient. Man, I gotta catch my breath. So, anyway, I wanted to bring that to you guys and gals today because that is just one little piece of the puzzle in order to reach a maximum efficiency as far as electricity goes, and to understand that you can get more power than you need out of the same doggone generator that you was using the conventional way by using sort of would be according to the definition an unconventional method of pulling that energy off of there. If it says that you've got 6,300 watts peak on your generator, you should have absolutely no problem of getting 6,300 watts peak off of your generator. And if you want to increase that amount of output wattage, it's by storing that energy and giving yourself a surplus. It's just like adding a couple penlight batteries to each other. You know, a couple 1.5 volt AA or AAA batteries, or even a C cell or even a D cell battery. You add those in series and you go from 1.5 to 3 volts. Well, you can do the same exact thing with capacitors that you do with batteries, and you can make a massive bank. And if you go watch my video Unsubscribe or 9 Volts, I think those are the two names of the videos where I show in there where I'm charging a capacitor system. Keep in mind that none of these systems have any batteries in them. None of them. They're all using capacitor technology. They're all using bridge rectifiers and different sizes of capacitors. You can actually use capacitors to time things out because a smaller capacitor obviously going to charge faster than a larger capacitor because of the space available. And so you imagine if you got the large capacitor, if there's any energy in there that exceeds the amount of the smaller capacitor will be full at all times. And so from that point on, all you got to do is trickle charge that large capacitor bank, which means that if you're watching that video that I mentioned about Unsubscribe or 9 Volts, I'm sitting there with a little hand crank generator, and I crank it up till I get it to the full voltage, and when it very first starts, it starts to, you know, be a little hard to very first get past that first point, but after that it gets easier and easier to turn that. And then when you get up to the full voltage, you can stop turning it, and you can literally watch as the energy goes from the large capacitor downstream to the smaller one, to the smaller one, all the way down to the tiniest load, which was a single blinking LED, and all the way down to finally just nothing but a piezoelectric speaker that is constantly making this annoying wheeze sound for quite a while after you've completely stopped putting power to it. But the purpose of showing that particular video was to show you how you can make your generating system so incredibly efficient that you don't even have to run these things full time. So you got a circuit set up that your generator kicks on, and when the voltage is low in your circuit, your generator kicks on, charges it up, and when it gets above it, it kicks itself off. And so it runs that energy down, and then whenever it gets low again, it does the same thing. So your generator isn't even on all the time. It just comes on long enough to do just like your alternator does. Your alternators have a built-in voltage regulator, unless you got an older vehicle that takes an external voltage regulator. But nonetheless, your alternator isn't energized constantly. It comes on whenever the battery voltage is detected to be low. It will come on and start to charge your battery up, and then whenever it gets to a certain point, it'll shut itself off so it's not wasting energy. And that's why my friend Muddy, he put a solar panel on his truck and connected it through a charge controller to his battery, so that as he was driving to and from work, that the solar panel was charging his battery up, and as long as the solar panel, the battery stayed charged, it never told the voltage regulator to turn the alternator on. So he was actually able to become more energy efficient and save fuel by using that method. And that's a method that you could actually do right now on your own vehicles if you don't mind having a solar panel on there. But eventually, they have some really thin, flexible solar panels that should be on the market. I think they probably already are. I haven't checked. But these really super thin, flexible ones, you could actually incorporate into, like, say, the roof or the trunk or the hood of your car, the deck lids or whatever. And as far as that goes, if you want it, even in the side panels of the deal, as long as there's sun shining at one part of your car, it will be keeping your battery topped off. And maybe even potentially using the storage bank in the back to charge your batteries up, so that when you get home, you got some battery banks in the back of your trunk that are ready to use for emergency power or something. Or even to the extent that you got this excess voltage to supplement your electric use at your home. So while your car is parked at home, it's still acting as a generator power station for your house. And I see in the future when you could actually engineer a car that would basically charge itself up, and then whenever you got home from work, you back your car up, it plugs right into the side of the house, and the car becomes your generator power source. And while you're gone, you have a power bank that runs all the necessary appliances until you get back home and you plug your generator back in. So you're actually taking your mobile power station to and fro with you. But these are all things that if you have your own dream team, you guys and gals can get together and engineer this kind of stuff. And with the capabilities of able to use Skype for live streaming videos between lab to lab, we can share information that way. And Twitch TV and even YouTube has a streaming video capabilities where you can put videos on YouTube or whatever. And if you wanted to even monetize your videos, you could probably make a few pennies while sharing the information with everybody else while they're putting advertisements on it. you know, that's not a bad thing. Throws a few pennies in the bucket. So that'll help you out financially to continue your research. I'm just basically saying to each and every one of you, become a researcher, your own researcher. Look in all kinds of options available to you to try to save yourself some doggone money as far as energy usage, and even when you get into like alternative gardenings and stuff. You know, the aquaponic systems that they have out there that you can get free information about. Those things, you're actually raising fish. You're using the water to circulate to fertilize your plants, and it bringing back fresh water into your fish tank, and you can use plants like duckweed to feed your fish. So it's a self-contained food system that you could build on just about any scale, where you'd always have food available to you. And if you understand about the different types of fish out there, one of the ones that they use, because they grow fast, is a fish called tilapia. And so you get a lot of food and vegetables growing all in the same system. You can even make a year-round greenhouse that you could keep this thing going, you know, all year round. Never have to worry about food. Never have to worry about electricity and stuff. You can use every process, and that's one reason why I kind of talked to Anon4305 there about that one specific comment about there is a loss when you move any energy, which is basically true if you're not recapturing that energy, sending it for something different. I mean, if you think about your average PC, you got transistors in there that have heat sinks on there. You got computer processors that have heat sinks on there. They actually sell water-cooled systems where you can circulate water through there, which will cool down your processors and stuff and your transistors. But what are you going to do with that heat? Are you just going to let the heat go out into the atmosphere, or are you going to transfer that heat into something, you know, useful? When I'm running my radio show, I usually got a little electric heater that keeps my room warm. But because I've already got the room up to operating temperature, I've got three computer monitors that are basically wasting energy via heat that is actually sustaining or maintaining the temperature in my room, and so I don't have to run both of them at the same time. When the computer's off, I'll have the heater on. When the computers are on, I have the heater off, because they'll put out enough heat that you don't have to shut the heater off anyway, or it'll run you out of here. You get too hot. So those are the kind of things that I keep talking about that will actually take what would have otherwise been classified as a loss. See, science says that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So where does it go? It's not a loss. It's never a loss unless you just allow it to go out into the atmosphere. Well, essentially, even if it's out into the atmosphere, it's not a loss either. Because as of right now, I'm using these computers for a heat source to keep me warm because it's cool outside. So there you go. I'm saving energy by not running both of them at the same time and reducing the risk of clicking a breaker off because I got too much things running at one time. But it's efficiency. That's what I keep talking about. Now, as far as any other appliance you got out there, if that thing has a transformer in it, then, and you got it plugged into the wall, if it's, as long as it's plugged into the wall, it's using some bit of power. And so if you're not using it and you got a way that you can turn it off, you know, some cases you might not want to have to keep resetting your your channels on your VCR or whatever. But a lot of these TVs and stuff that they're getting now, I said VCR, they probably got DVDs and Blu-ray now, so that tells how old I am. But anyway, some of them are set up to where they'll auto-scan and find the channels themselves. They're getting pretty impressive as far as the technology, so there's no reason for them to actually be plugged in if you're not going to be using them. So you could actually hook everything up to some sort of remote system, and the remote's the only thing that's working, or just hook it up to a surge protector and just flip the switch whenever you're not using it, so that you're saving electricity. Makes you more efficient. But as the energy hogs that we are, we like to have things on all the time. And so if we're going to have them on all the time, then we need to figure out a more more efficient way to use that energy that we are going to be using. So what I eventually end up seeing is a system that you can actually plug into any outlet out there, and basically from one outlet alone be able to charge up your power banks for emergency purposes. And you might actually find that running off of that continuously might be a way to save you a massive amount of money. There's a guy out there that's sort of become an urban legend. I can't remember the guy's name, but if you look back into it in alternative energy, you might stumble onto the same story. But essentially what he did was just what I said. He took and was using one outlet to run a generator that he engineered, and charging up his bank, and then basically running all the rest of his appliances throughout his entire house off of the equivalents of the voltage that come in, that it would require to maybe run your average coffee pot or whatever. And so the power company, seeing that his entire house is being used, but he's only using so much power, and so they tried to accuse him of stealing electricity, when in fact he wasn't stealing electricity. He was paying for everything that he had, and everything that he was using, he was paying for it. But he was just wise enough to take that power coming out of there, ramp it up, and use it for something completely, using it in a completely unconventional manner, and saving himself a lot of money. Because for every outlet you got going on plugged in, that's more money to the power company. So those are some things to think about. Even if you don't go completely off the power grid, even if you have a device that you can supplement and make all your appliances run incredibly efficient, like for example your average freezer or refrigerator, it doesn't have to be plugged in 24/7. You can set a system up in that thing that when and only when the temperature gets below a certain point, that it will actually put power back to that thing. So when it's not being used, it's not dragging a parasitic load onto your electric bill, so to speak. So it made your house more efficient that way. And that's just, one little tiny example. Let's see, Allmedic said, my TV is turned on about once a month. I keep the surge protector turned off until use. That's wise, because that makes it efficient. And if you're into like conspiracy, some people think they can put, actually I think it was Samsung or one of them like that said that they actually have a microphone built into your computer where they can, or your TV, where they can listen in on your conversation, and you had to go in and actually shut this thing off. I can't remember which one that was, but they actually said they did it, and there was that old camera in the converter box, so shut it off and they ain't spying on you. But either way, that's a good idea. And there's all kinds of little cell phone chargers and stuff like that. Anything that has a transformer in it, you'd want to shut off, because those transformers are still getting power to the primary of that transformer, and it's still sitting there on standby producing energy and basically not doing any work. So those are the ones you'd want to unplug, and you'd be surprised at how much difference that'll make whenever you're not sitting there running a transformer. And I hadn't even thought about it much, but even the fluorescent lighting systems, as long as those fluorescent lighting systems are actually shutting the transformer inside, or the ballast is what they call them. Some of them are not called ballast, they're called magnetic transformers or something, magnetic ballast or whatever. Anyway, it's essentially a transformer that doesn't have a secondary on it. It's just a single primary, and when you plug it in, It catches the out spike, and then it catches the back EMF and ramps the voltage up while it's running to basically run your fluorescent lighting systems. So they're pretty interesting. I've actually, I don't know if I did a video about it. I talked about them before, but maybe I have to do a video and show some people about them. Because you can take these little transformers and put a neon bulb on them, on each one of the wires, and you can sit there and tap it on a 9-volt battery, and you can watch as that back EMF energizes that neon into plasma. And so you got a source of energy right there that you could take a 9-volt battery and some transistors or relays and make that thing pulse a high voltage out of the doggone transformer off of a 9-volt battery or small power source. One of the reasons why I stay underneath 12 volts whenever I'm talking about alternative energy, because anybody out there can pretty much get a hold of 12 volts. And if you can get a hold of a 12-volt car battery, and you know how to use that properly, you can get more usage out of it, because you'd be surprised at how much energy is actually available in your average 12-volt battery. And if you're using a charge controller and a 45-watt solar panel to charge something up, and you're running a circuit board that is basically pulsing, taking that 12 volts and pulsing this circuit board and changing that into from current into high voltage, voltage is pressure. And that is what will actually charge those capacitors. Run that signal, which would be a pulse DC at that point in time, which is going to act just like an AC wave either way, but you can either run it through a bridge rectifier, or depending on what type of capacitors, you might actually be able to charge direct from, you know, that circuit board the way you design it. You end up with a pulse DC, you can charge a DC capacitor, or with an AC wave coming out of it, you need to be able to rectify that with diodes and such so that you can charge your DC capacitors. And your AC capacitors is just going to smooth out the wave for you. So if you got your output of your AC generator, you got some AC capacitors that are actually storing energy, but they're smoothing the signal out on the other side. And from the experiment that I did with the DDS signal generator, I'm running at 600 hertz, all right? In overseas, like in the UK and stuff, you guys are like on 50 hertz. Over here in the States, we're on 60 hertz. And so you got 120 volts AC at 60 hertz coming in over here that basically is more energy than these doggone appliances actually need to run. But what I did with that signal generator, well, like I explained earlier, starting from the 120 volts, dropped it down to 5 volts, basically the equivalence of a USB charger, run the signal generator that its internal circuitry would ramp it up to 9 volts, and then turn around and use that square wave signal and pulse a microwave oven transformer, ramp the voltage up again to increase the pressure, and be able to charge capacitors through a bridge rectifier, and then turn around and have at least 7, at this point, 7.04 volts in surplus while running it under a load. So if you're running it under a load off of 5 volts, do the math, folks. Do the math. 5 volts is all it took me to run that, and I have a 7.04 volt surplus all day long while running this thing. And continuously, it's gradually putting more charge to those capacitors, even while it's under a load. Basically working the same way your car alternator does. Now, that information there could be expanded on. See, Allmedic said, if it's plugged in, it is subject to power surge damage. Yeah, that's another good example of why not to leave things plugged in, because, you know, a lightning strike down the street and all that energy comes surging down the power line and, you know, blows out your stuff. That ain't very good. But that's another reason why they have surge protectors, in order to try to avoid that. But surge protectors don't always work. It just depends on the circumstances of how much power was actually sent down that line. And there's a myth out there about electromagnetic pulses, energy. Like if somebody lit a nuclear power, a nuclear bomb off in the atmosphere, they say that that would destroy any electronics. Well, that's not the case if it ain't plugged in. If it isn't plugged in, if it's not connected to a battery source, there's no way for it to complete the circuit and fry it out. So, you know, simple things like putting your radios and stuff inside of a galvanized toolbox would use the Faraday cage information to basically preserve it anyway. That I'm not stressing over all that. Either way, just important to note that, like, Allah Medic, I guess that's how you pronounce it, said in the chat room, if it is plugged in, it's subject to a power surge damage. That's true. But either way, while it's plugged in, it actually is pulsing that primary, and it's still using power even when it's turned off. That's not using as much power, but it's not using much less power either. Because when it's turned on, it still, you know, it still uses a little bit more because it's demanding a little bit more from the primary, which, you know, it's very little difference. So, let me see here. Okay, I'm checking out a video link real quick. Stephen Gibbons posted a link in here. Also, you know, those boosts, there you go. He sent a picture in of a, you know, Tesla Maker store where you can actually a mini boost converter pack, 12 volt capacitor car battery. I guess you can buy it from them. That's pretty cool. So, anyway, he's got a video on it as well. I better make sure I don't do that. Anyway, Stephen Gibbons threw a link in there for laserhacker.com. That's another one of the researchers we got down on down under TeslaMaker.com too, I think. But either way, check these guys and gals out on these different links that we're talking about, because they're actually, some of them's actually making products that you can buy for your research as well, or just your average use and stuff. You know, I had a friend out there built me a Slayer Exciter circuit for my testing purposes. You know, it's not that I couldn't have built it myself, but it's that, you know, I was like busy with a whole bunch of other projects. But either way, you know, that's pretty cool. You've got all these people out there that have the talents and skills, and if they like to make stuff, and you can reimburse them for their time and their money for doing it for you, you know. Yes, I gave him money to build it for me. Let's see, we got Ted calling in. How you doing, Ted?
Hey, Shazaz, how do you do?
We're live. We got about 40 minutes left.
I'd just like to jump in when I can, say hello, send some love your way, let you know you got support out there for your mission.
Cool. Well, I got a nifty package in the mail from my friend that I'm working on a project with. Had sent me some circuit boards with some really cool boost circuits and an electric motor that I'm excited about doing experiments. Plus, that's what all that noise was in the background, folks, while you was listening to that podcast. That was me rattling around opening packages. I also got my backup power supply for this computer that's transmitting my radio show and such. So anyway, what you been up to, Ted? Anything good?
Oh yeah, just you know, being friends with everyone, trying to keep supportive of people.
Cool.
Like the fact that a lot of people are working on projects in the backyard. Beautiful.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to bring a lot of these researchers out there that might not get noticed otherwise, trying to bring them to the table, because today I've been talking a lot about boost converters and battery capacitor hybrids, because the capacitors are actually acting as a buffer between your battery and your load, so that your battery don't have to work harder, therefore making it last longer. And to the fact that the capacitors actually have a pretty lengthy charge and discharge, where they aren't damaged to the difference of an actual lead acid battery, that, you know, they got certain, so many cycles that they can go through, and then They either get run low of electrolyte, which you, if you add to it, will, you know, put that battery back up to conditioned again, you know, or they end up failing altogether. So taking the load off of those batteries and actually putting the burden on the capacitors makes your system more efficient. It makes it so the battery's not getting hot like it would. It's making
I like that, because I see that in the way the car operates. How you run so much draw off your car battery, but if you were to turn your car off, that battery's shot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And run all that at once. But when that all that draw is going to your your car alternator, and it's right there to meet it, and it's just using that battery as like a reference point almost.
Yeah, well, in the capacitor portion of it, they have these stereo system capacitors that are really cool. I got a couple different brands, but they're like 500 microfarad a piece, and they have a built-in voltmeter on them that will tell you the voltage and everything that's going. But those are used for high-end car stereo systems that are like, you know, huge amplifiers and big speaker systems, and they're running a lot of power. If they ran them in your conventional, electrical system of the car, it'd run your battery down and make your alternator, you know, get weak faster from trying to keep up with your battery. Well, these act as a buffer between your battery and your alternator, so that they're carrying the majority of the load. One of the podcasts that I played showed that when he measured it on the amperage draw on the capacitor side, it was much higher of a draw on the capacitor side than it was whenever he measured the amperage draw on the battery side by having these two combined the way that he did, so that whenever he starts his car up, the draw of the starter trying to turn the motor over, it draws a lot of amperage, but it's drawing it from the capacitors instead of directly from the battery. Therefore, the battery's not getting hot. The circuitry to keep any, you know, back spike from coming in there is not getting hot. And the capacitor banks themselves are not getting hot. So everything in that just made it more efficient. You see what I'm saying?
I do. You know, the Benini circuit has always been really a great, beautiful little circuit, very efficient. I mean, it's a lot of people work with it to fill up batteries and just, but if you put the Benini on a capacitor, it'll fill up the capacitor quickly.
Oh, yeah.
The Benini motor can fill up multiple capacitors very quickly if just with a few modifications to it. It's like the trick always has been, well, how do you dump those capacitors into the battery? You know what I mean? Without damaging it.
Well, that's easy. That's simple. They're connected right directly to the battery, just like they're running in parallel with your battery. And so basically all you're doing is you're using the capacitor as a buffer, and you can put a resistor on there so that you don't get surges back and forth from either one. And so that's how you do that. It's not high tech or rocket science. You just connect your battery right straight to the capacitor. As long as the capacitor is already connected to the load when you do this, you don't have no issue. It's just if you charge that capacitor up and then try to connect it to your load, because of the way that capacitors have the capability of discharging instantly, then that could do a lot of damage to whatever it is you want to run. So you connect it up when the capacitor isn't charged up, and then you connect it to your battery all at the same time, so that your capacitor isn't full when you're trying to connect the load. It's already connected to the load. You can use a capacitor as a battery as long as the load is already connected to it prior to charging it up. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Because those capacitors, they store a lot of power. An 800 microfarad capacitor will blow your thumb right off your hand. That's how much energy it has stored in there. I welded a screwdriver with one. Alright, that's just an 800 microfarad. Imagine these 500,000 microfarad capacitors. That's a lot of power, man. So folks, safety note, be really cautious and conscious around capacitor technology, because you don't want to get hurt. We don't want nobody hurt. But they have massive storage capability. They will charge rapidly. and they will take the burden off of your battery. They'll take the burden off your generator system. So if you wanted to build you a off-grid system, you get you some little cheapo generator, or even build you a homemade, like my redneck generator that I made with a car alternator and a, I think it was probably about a 3-horse or 3.5-horse Briggs & Stratton motor on there. And you hook it to a battery and start that thing up, and it's just like running your lawnmower, and it charges through the alternator and charges the battery up, and it'll charge the battery up fast. But if you got a large enough battery bank, let's say you got 112-volt car batteries all ran in parallel with each other, you could only have to run that generator long enough to charge those batteries up. When the batteries got completely charged up, a beeper would come off, and you go over there and shut the thing off, and then you would have a surplus of energy in your batteries to run. Same thing with any solar panels. You don't need a massive solar array to charge those batteries. All you got to do is have your voltage up high enough, and even a 40-watt solar panel will charge 100 batteries in parallel. It might just take a little bit longer to get them all the way up to full charge. But it's that ridiculously simple. Now, the only reason why you have massive solar panel arrays is because you're pulling power at such a demand that your solar panel can't keep up with it. And so you can balance all that out by the way that you're pulling that energy off of that battery bank to begin with, putting a capacitor as a buffer in between there so that you're not demanding so much from your batteries, and you're getting a loss from the heat that's being generated in that battery, because when you have that battery under a direct load, it now is doing the electrolysis process with the water in there, your electrolyte, your battery acid, and it's basically producing hydrogen, which is producing pressure in that battery, and that hydrogen will escape out of the vents of the battery. Therefore, it'll start eventually draining your batteries dry, and so you got to take distilled water and refurbish your battery every so often, and basically to maintain them. You have to do some preventive maintenance if you run them the conventional way. But with the way that I'm talking, the unconventional way that I'm explaining to you, is that you would have less maintenance necessary to those batteries because you're not brutalizing those batteries. What do you think of that, Ted?
You're saying just by having the supercapacitors in line, you're going to add life to your battery.
Exactly, because
They're a little bit pricey, you know what I mean? They haven't quite come down to what I would call quite affordable for everyone, but they're not unaffordable, you know what I mean?
If you get on eBay, and you keep an eye out on eBay, because things are getting cheaper, it's going to get to a point where they're like a dime a dozen, and why they are a dime a dozen, you need to buy a dozen, maybe 10 dozen. All right, that way you'll have them on hand, but that way you'll always be assured that you got a storage bank for energy. But that's an exciting thing about the times that we live in right now, is that electronics and circuitry are getting more advanced and cheaper and easier to get. And if you're paying attention right now, you'll be the winner on the other side, because you'll have an incredible knowledge on how to make your energy usage incredible efficient. That way, if you get tired of the power company like I do and decide you want to go off the grid, then that's all you got to do. All you got to know is that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So there are no losses in the system unless you allow it to be a loss. You can use what would have been a loss, heat off of everything from transistors to MOSFETs to computer processors, even light off of your lighting system. Heat from that is energy that could be guided to wherever you want it to go to make your health or your home off of more energy efficient. Every little bit that you do to recapture any of that energy that would have otherwise been wasted, so you can make an incredibly efficient off-grid system with the LED technology that we've got these days. They don't take very much power to run, and it's only going to get better. And some of the LED systems that they got are incredibly bright. And if you understand how an LED actually works, that it really doesn't require the current flow that some people, like if you get a 9-volt one, it don't take 9 volts to light that thing up with a lot of current. You can actually do it by ramping the voltage up, dropping the current down, and that same LED will still light up, not burn out, and still produce the same amount of light. You see what I'm saying? So,
yep.
That's why it's a really good idea to pay attention to all these alternative energy researchers and any little anomalies that they're coming across. They're all important. Even if you think you got an idea, but it's for some reason you find yourself at a roadblock and you can't figure out, you know, okay, well, it seems like it'll work, but for some reason there's something that, you know, at this point it stops it from working. Well, we probably have the piece of the puzzle to solve that for you. So that's where the Dream Team comes in. And all these different, you know, technologies we got, like Skype and Twitch TV and YouTube and Facebook and all that. We can live stream back and forth to each other. Or, you know, private video conferences with Skype or other programs like that. Folks, we got it made right now. And if we take this time while we're standing at the crossroads to actually begin to, you know, utilize this technology for our best interest, and instead of waiting around to see what the governments and the corporations going to do, they're going to maneuver it around to their favor. That's the way money's made. They're going to maneuver it around to where they have the power and they have, you know, control over the technology and all the patents and such. There's ways around all that. And right now we're at I call it the golden point of time. We're sitting here at an amazing time of technology and information that if we utilize it properly, we can build our own communities and companies right alongside theirs and beat them at their own doggone game and do it to the extent to where everybody benefits from every nation and actually does it in such perfect harmony with nature that we're not polluting anything. You have the power, folks. That's what I started off telling you on this Mad Science show today. You have the power. Right now, you have free energy. It's up to you to use it. We've explained in graphic detail multiple different wet methods by which to use the energy that surrounds you out there. There's so many different ways. And if you go listen to the physicists or whatever they call themselves these days, the engineers and all that, that are basically stuck in the matrix of the school book and the college education indoctrination way of thinking, you're not going to get them to even humor you on anything that is outside of what that book says. The mere fact that you're sitting here listening to me right now, you're outside the box, and at least by 1 foot, you're outside the box, and you're hearing information that you wouldn't got in college. You're hearing information that you wouldn't got in grade school or high school or anything. See, I'm willing to test science. I'm willing to stand up in the face of science and tell them, if I think they're wrong, I'm going to show them why I think they're wrong. In the most respectful manner, I'm going to challenge the scientists of the world. And I'm going to challenge the laws of physics. I'm going to see if it's true that we can indeed boldly go where no man has gone before. That's what mad science is all about. Because I see a need in this world to balance out the scales of justice, to give people, you know, the option to be able to live with the same luxuries that people who have access to technologies to be able to have for everybody. You know, even if you decide you want to live in a mud hut in some, what some people would like to call a third world country, which, once again, I hate that terminology, we can make that mud hut the most comfortable, well-lit, place to live in your neighborhood. We have the technology to do so. And if we can get engineers to, you know, come outside the box and work with us on our dream team, well, I'll tell you what, we'll make the perfect machines. Because we are capable of doing just that. We have every answer to every question necessary to resolve all the problems that they say are problems in the world. We have the solutions. We're right here. We're right now. Now, on my side of the world, my dream team's already in process. We're working on some things, and down the line, we'll be more than happy to share that with everybody, but you'll still have access to my YouTube with the research I'm doing with the signal generator and any videos that I put out there. I'm just trying to keep the information flowing. And the best way that you can support this effort here, this quest that I'm on, is to share the information. When you find something that you deem worthy that is going to help somebody out, you know, copy the link. Take the time to paste it over to your social media networks and tell your friends about it. Tell your friends how you can save money. See, this ain't one of those crazy old infomercials that always tell you, well, let me tell you how to save money and just watch this brief little video, and then at the end of it, that's when the sales pitch comes in. That's how much they're going to charge you for their plan. This is our plan, and we'll sell you this book right here, and it'll tell you step by step how to do it. No, we're giving you the plan right out front. While you're listening to the video, you're learning. We're telling you the secret right out of the gate. Not trying to get no pennies out of your bucket. We're trying to add pennies to your bucket. So you got a phone call there, Ted?
Yeah, she's sorry, bro. Give me 1 second.
Oh, that's all right. So anyway...
Can you mute me, Shazam?
No, just... I don't know. I actually can't.
I can do it. I found it. Sorry, okay. Brother. I see.
See that, ladies and gentlemen? Duct tape and bailing wire. We got this thing going on. You don't need no major multi-billion dollar studio to do what it is we're doing. We got old technology, duct tape and bailing wire, good-hearted individuals from People to People Radio, Wolf Spirit Radio, Shaziz Radio, and all the other affiliated networks that rebroadcast and repodcast and all that kind of jazz. Just help us out in our deal. And Scotty Sarvin said, better still, don't have a TV. That's a good way to be energy efficient. Just throw your TV out. Well, don't throw it out. Make a few bucks off of it. Hawk the TV or, you know, recycle it or something, and then that way you got a few bucks in your pocket. Don't need no TV. You could use those funds to get off the TV to go fishing or something, you know? If it works. Even if the TV don't work, it's still worth something, because if you look inside modern day circuitry, there's gold in them Nar Hills, people. You recycle the old computers, there are gold-plated pins in there, there's white gold, there's silver, all kinds of other different types of solders in there. There are useful products in every single thing that you got, whether it be your refrigerator, your washing machine, your dryer, you know, any of those things. Any appliance that you got out there has repurposable things in there that you can use. And if you're into magnets, we're going magnet fishing or whatever, you can get magnets out of old, microwave oven magnetrons. Just to remember, when you're messing around with the old style microwave ovens, you got to pay attention to in the magnetron, there's a ceramic. One of them has a pink ceramic. That's the dangerous one. You don't want to break that or get any of the little particles off and ingest it, because it's bad for you, real bad. The white ones are safe. But either way, just practice caution if you're ever dismantling any, so you ain't cutting yourself or getting toxic any or whatever. But inside those microwaves, there's all kinds of metals that could be recycled, aluminum and tins and irons and stuff like that. And the magnets off of each end of the magnetron, there's two magnets in every single old-style microwave. Now, modern-day, I think it's actually even in the newer microwave ovens as well. But the newer ones don't have a microwave oven transformer. They actually use inverter technology to do the same thing that the transformer would have done. Basically, heat up the element in the Magnetron and then send the high voltage in, but they're using like power MOSFETs and flyback, you know, ZVS driver kind of circuitry to produce the high voltage that turns into a microwave that cooks your food. Those are all things that the information's available to you out there. So don't throw nothing away until you know what it is. You might have something really important in there that you could actually turn into emergency power source. You know, if you got an old electric treadmill at home, some of those have a 30-volt permanent magnet motor in there. That's a generator right out of the gate. Your Fisher and Paykel and Samsung washer and dryers, the direct drive washing machine motors, those are generators right out of the gate. And so you could, if your worst case scenario and you had your power went off or something like that, you could at least keep the lights on and charge some batteries and keep some sort of communication going. So that's a plus. And even to the extent of old batteries, let's see here. I'm going to try to add somebody else to the call here. Ah, I think I hung up on Ted. Thomas, are you there?
Yeah.
All right, well, I think I hung up on Ted instead of adding you to the call. We're live.
Who?
Ted.
Call him back.
Yeah. All right, I'm working on it. Yeah, let's see. Add Ted. I got to find Ted. Yeah, we got about 15 or 20 minutes left of the Mad Science. There he is, Ted Williams. Let's see if we can get him back in there. Add him in there. Ted's a good guy. See if we got him back. So anyway, we're talking about efficiency, the capacitor technology, hybrid battery slash capacitor combinations, and the reason why they're a good thing to use. Ted, are you back?
Yeah, I'm here, bro.
Yeah, I accidentally hung up on you while trying to add Thomas. Say hi to Thomas.
Hey, Thomas.
Hello.
All right, so, you know, out there in the research world, old Thomas is pretty doggone good with chemistry. Some of the things that he comes up with, if you ever need to talk about chemistry, give him a holler. And he also does some pretty cool other artistic work that you catch him up. What's that, Borg steamfactory.com, Thomas?
Yeah, I've released my GoFundMe for the 3D printer. I'm close enough to being able to release something that people could actually use, so.
Cool. Alright, so yeah, that's another thing. He's doing some 3D printing stuff and some other really cool stuff, so try to keep an eye on his website. He's got some really cool stuff going on. Well, Thomas, I got a better camera for my Twitch deal. So, and
good deal.
And I got a really good price on it, so I'm happy about that. And I'll tell everybody about, if you get an opportunity, check out that link. And also, while you're at it, jump over there and check out Thomas on there. Check out his Twitch account. It's basically, you'll find him in my friends list over there. That's how we all network together and be able to do some pretty cool stuff. But either way, I started off by saying you have the power, what you do. You have a lot of technology that you have available to you. There are solutions for all kinds of things. But we played some podcasts today to explain to you how you can actually use capacitors as a buffer between the load that you want to run and the actual generator, which would be your prime mover, of whether it be a gasoline engine or a electric motor generator kind of deal there. And my ultimate goal is to get everybody be able to see how I'm talking about when you want to pull that energy off of that generator without bogging that generator down, just move that energy away from the generator, how to do it in the most efficient manner so that if it says that you have access to 5,000 watts peak power off that generator, you should be able to get 5,000 watts off of it. The main reason why you don't get 5,000 watts off of it, and they call it the peak amount of power, is that when you put that under a load, that makes that generator work harder, therefore slowing it down, producing less output. And then when you put another, turn another light bulb on, it does it once again, and it's allowing that energy to go back into the same generator you're trying to pull from, which makes that generator head itself have to work harder, which is going to cause it to get hot because of the amp draw that it's trying to make. And it also going to transfer that energy to the actual prime mover, which is the generator itself. And so that's going to make it have to use more fuel in order to try to compensate for the demand of the generator head. So by moving that energy away from all that, you reduce that. For every step you take towards that, moving that energy away from that generator head, making that generator more efficient by not having that generator head be under such a demand for the power that you want on the output side. So there's several different ways of doing it, one of which I explained to you today about using capacitors as a buffer between your generator and using the capacitors to actually carry the load. That makes your battery not have to work hard. That makes it so that your generator doesn't demand, or your batteries aren't demanding more from your generator, and so on. The other way, more a little bit more high-tech version, is what I keep talking about, my plasma technology, to where you're taking the energy off of the generator and running it at a different frequency to energize one of the noble gases, which I figured if you're going for heat, then you want like a neon, because neon takes less voltage input in order to energize into plasma and will get hotter faster. And that will transfer that energy off your generator. And keep in mind, while you're doing this and you have this energized, you're doing a couple different things. One is you're generating light and heat, but you're also generating a radiant energy that's surrounding that chamber, plus you're changing that AC current into a rectified DC current out the other side of this reactor. So you're getting a 3-for-1. And if you contain this energy, there are no losses in the system that way. So you can move all that energy out, just change it into a form that your generator head doesn't recognize any longer, and there's no electron flow going back, producing a stronger magnetic field that is causing that armature to have to try to fight through that field in order to give you what it is that you want. So that brings your efficiency up. So when I get this one particular circuit board resolved for a friend of mine that I'm doing a project for, helping with, and get that resolved, and as soon as he says it's all right for everybody else to see that, we'll share that. But in the meantime, on the same exact concept, not the same exact method of how to put the circuitry together, but the same exact concept, I'm sharing with everybody how to take a signal generator and pulse a transformer and basically show you what it is that I've been saying real time. That's what the Twitch TV thing is going to come in handy, and hopefully I'll be able to live stream while doing a radio broadcast, so that if I'm trying to explain, I can actually show you real time. You can either watch over there with video, or you can listen in over here with just audio. But either way, starting from 5 volts output, which initially was 120 volts output, 110, 120, using the step-down transformer from the actual wall socket, which is the grid power, and then that is basically turns it into USB power, 5 volts, running into a DDS signal generator. That circuitry inside there then ramps that 5 volts up to about 9 volts without being under load. And so somewhere between 5 to 9 volts, that it is pumping out a signal that at this point in time, I'm using at 600 hertz, which is higher than the 60 hertz that your appliances are running on. But I'm running that signal at 600 hertz, which is pulsing the primary, which is inducing the current into the secondary and ramping that voltage up. And so out the other side at 600 hertz, I'm able to quickly charge capacitors and run small circuit boards with, while at the same time maintaining a 7.04 voltage surplus in the process there. Looks like we lost Ted there, Thomas.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah. Anyway, so what do you think about, you got any thoughts about what I was talking about there, Thomas?
600 hertz is kind of low, so it could be using a good amplifier and create a 600 hertz waveform in a sound generator and then run it off of your computer's audio output to produce that from just a regular home stereo.
Yeah, you got a point. I'll have to do some tests on that as well. And also,
be careful, that little neon bulb you'll blow out if you do that though and ramp that power up, because that signal generator you have doesn't have much power.
Yeah.
I have the same one sitting on my bench.
Well, the thing is, the reason why I wanted to use this particular one was because it doesn't have that much power. Because what I'm ultimately trying to show is how to increase the efficiency, because where I started off, where I was only 110 to 120 volts, whatever the actual, sometimes it's like 115, it's in between there, whatever. Nonetheless, the normal outlet over here in the States, that much power, dropping it down to 5 volts. See, I don't need to plug it into the grid. I could actually plug it into one of those little USB power supplies. Alright, and all I need is the 5 volts off of it to do what it is that I've done so far. So that makes it amazing efficiency there. And I'm saying that I can actually top what I'm doing right there. But like you said, 600 hertz, that's not a whole lot. And so we can actually build circuitry using, you know, anything from potentiometers to, you know, regulate the voltage in with, you know, transistors to pulse it at 600 hertz, you know, slow it down. If we can get a transistor circuit or even a MOSFET circuit, power MOSFET, to pulse a battery at 600 hertz, it's, faster than the 60 hertz that we use, but it's still low enough that, you know, it's not going to generate a lot of heat, if you understand what I'm saying. So those transistors would last a whole lot longer, as long as all you were doing was using it for the voltage potential that you could get on the other side, because it's not asking for more than that thing's able to do. It's the current, the heavy current draw on these things through there that causes them to get hot. Now the voltage, on the other hand, after running these transformers and these other circuits on the opposite side of that signal generator all day long, the transformer wasn't even warm. It's actually cool to the touch, room temperature. And the bridge rectifier that I was using, not even remotely warm, cool to the touch, room temperature. So I'm transferring that energy through that I want. I'm ramping the voltage up. I'm getting the pressure that I want. I'm storing that that pressure in capacitors and being able to use those capacitors as a buffer between the load and the prime mover, which in this case would be the signal generator and the microwave oven transformer. And so I'm getting what I need off the other side with a surplus of 7.04 volts, which to me, that's pretty doggone good. So I don't know what the mathematical specifics of what I'm doing is, but I can tell you this. I'm shooting for, what the heck is that? I'm shooting for super efficiency. Some one of these doggone little deals just popped up on my screen right there, and some foul mouth heathen was on one of my YouTube channels saying something crazy. Alright, well, that's the way it is. People don't always like what you have to say, but it's alright. It's all well and good.
Free speech?
Yeah. They can say what they want. And sticks and stones, all that kind of jazz, I don't care. You know? But what I'm talking about here, the efficiency that could be achieved, re-engineering things to be incredibly efficient. It don't matter what machine's out there. If you got a loss in that system, it can be improved upon. And the energy is only a loss when you use it or move it if you don't tap into wherever that loss would have been. If it's generating heat, that's not a loss. That's more power. So, you know, like I said, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So where does it go? It's still in the system. It's being dispersed into the atmosphere. So it's only a loss. It's only wasted energy if you don't monopolize on it while you have the opportunity. It's as simple as that. So anyway, I hope y'all enjoyed the show today, folks. If you like what you had heard here, share the podcast with somebody out there and keep an eye on Shazia's on Twitch TV there. I put the links down inside the chat room. Might have to throw them in there. Everything got scrolled up on there. But keep an eye on the YouTube channel, and I'll keep on showing you my results as far as trying to get as much use out of the energy in the most efficient manner. See, it's not that we don't have enough power. It's that we're not using it efficiently. And you can get a lot more work done with a whole lot less input once you reach that efficiency level. Right now, we're energy hogs. We're dragging out more energy. That's why our stuff is getting hot. That's why it's getting reaching its thermal breakdown and failing. Friction and all that kind of stuff. We turn all them losses into gains and move that energy forward instead of allowing it to disperse into the atmosphere or just go by the wayside or cause more damage. We're going to move it away from our generating source, and we're going to use it for some other need. So if it's generating heat, we'll heat our water with it or heat our house with it. Just like I mentioned earlier, I turned my electric heater off because these computers, they push heat out the back from the processors while they're running, and I got three monitors that are producing heat, so I already got my room up to operating temperature overnight, and I use these to maintain it, and I'm at a comfortable rate right now. I'm not freezing when it's cold as heck outside. So with that said,
you hear me? Give my creation life!
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.